The Preston and Steve Daily Podcast is presented by Acme. Acme, fresh foods, local flavors, and the official supermarket of MMR's Preston and Steve Show.
93.3 WMMR, audio on demand, presents the Preston and Steve Show podcast. And now, Preston and Steve's news updates with Kathy Romano.
Today is Thursday. It's May 23rd. Good morning, Kathy.
Good morning. In the news this morning, a violent tornado touched down in Jefferson City, Missouri, causing heavy damage Wednesday, according to the National Weather Service. The service reported that a confirmed large and destructive tornado was observed over Jefferson City at about 11:43 p.m. Wednesday, moving northeast at about 40 miles per hour. The capital city has a population of about 40,000 and is located 130 miles west of St. Louis. No fatalities have been reported, but Jefferson City Police Lieutenant David Williams said that there have been multiple calls for people being trapped in their homes.
That was my second radio job was in Jefferson City, Missouri. I lived there for a few years. And I remember one day in particular in the spring, I had to initiate the emergency alert system, I think, four times in one day.
Four times. Yeah.
Yeah, because of tornado warnings. Now, I never saw one, but it's really active in that area for tornadoes. And it was... You know, the sky gets this greenish hue. It's very strange, but it wasn't uncommon. Now, one never hit in Jefferson City that I never knew of, but this one was big, and they were calling it, I don't know if you have this information, Kathy, a wedge tornado.
Oh, no. What is that?
A wedge tornado is when the size of it is, it's wider than it is tall.
Oh, okay.
And so it was a really huge activity, a really huge formation that came through.
Yeah, the footage of the destruction was unbelievable.
Yeah.
So and you had, you know, it seemed to be right in the heart of a lot of stuff.
And injured, but no one dead
not yet.
At
there's
this
no,
point.
There's no fatalities. They said that there's people that are stuck in their homes, and they're telling people if they are safe to just stay there for now. They said it's pretty chaotic.
Wow.
And like you said, there's debris all over the place. They said you could see insulation, shingles, metal pieces, tree limbs all over the area. Power outages are also being reported in parts of the city. One tornado skirted just a few miles north of Joplin, Missouri, on its eighth anniversary of a catastrophic tornado that killed 161 people in the city. Storms and torrential rains have ravaged the Midwest from Texas through Oklahoma, Kansas, Nebraska, Iowa, Missouri, and Illinois. Two barges broke loose and floated swiftly down the swollen Arkansas River in eastern Oklahoma on Wednesday, spreading alarm downstream as they threatened to hit a dam. Authorities urged residents of small towns in Oklahoma and Kansas to leave their homes as rivers and streams rose.
Yeah, I mean, obviously you live where you live, and that's the deal. But, you know, Preston, people live in, like, Tornado Alley, yeah. You know, where it's especially going to sleep knowing there's a tornado warning and knowing that you could be woken up by a tornado coming through your house, you know, it's a nightmare scenario. I don't know how people deal with it.
Yeah, well, what was it, a month ago, a month and a half ago? We all got those tornado warnings
yes,
in the middle
did.
Of the night, like 3
yeah.
o'clock in the morning.
Yeah.
That was, you know, slightly terrifying.
Of course, because that's unique here. That's kind of common there.
Right? Well, the alarms all went off on your phones. I mean, that's like another, that's a great godsend of having cell phones now, is that, you know, because... Before, I guess you would just have to...
It's just Helen Hunt.
Hope that you maybe heard an alarm or that your TV was on and that alarm came off. But no. The fact that your phones can go off in the middle of the night, that's pretty great.
So no reported deaths at this time. So hopefully everyone is okay. There are some people trapped in homes, but hopefully the authorities can get to them soon. Authorities in Bethlehem are investigating a reported explosion. It happened Wednesday night around Blossom and Floor Lanes. ATF officials say there was an explosion, but they can't confirm the type of device yet. An eyewitness said that he was cutting grass between 6:30 and 7 when he heard what sounded like an explosion. The resident who lives in the area of the explosion said that he was standing outside when a man driving a gray pickup truck tossed something out the window and it exploded.
Do they believe this is connected to that whole string of explosions that was happening for a while? Do you remember that?
No, they got that.
They got that guy, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think they did. No injuries have been reported, fortunately. Bethlehem Police and ATF are continuing to investigate this explosion. It's a beautiful day in the neighborhood, and today, to honor the late Mr. Rogers, people in Pennsylvania are being challenged to be a good neighbor. Governor Tom Wolf proclaimed it 1-4-3 Day. He wants to encourage everyone to do something kind for someone else in memory of the beloved children's television personality. Fred Rogers often used 1-4-3 as a way to say I love you, referring to the numbers of letters in each word.
That's so adorable. I'm waiting for John Wick Day.
To participate, every time you do something nice for someone, share it on social media using hashtag 143DayInPA, and it will be counted in the kindness tracker. If you need assistance, the Pennsylvania Department of Community and Economic Development set up a hashtag 143DayInPA kindness generator. Some of the ideas it suggests include donate to a local children's fund, give a friend or a coworker a ride home, and share. Send a care package to troops.
All good ideas.
Thursday is also the 143rd day of the year.
Did you guys see the documentary? The most recent one?
Not.
No. So good.
Really should see
it. It's excellent.
It's a tearjerker, man.
It is.
It's really well done. And if it does not take you back to your childhood, then you didn't have a great childhood because it's just phenomenal.
I have, in preparation for that being promoted, the video was surfacing of him addressing the Senate.
Yeah.
Looking for more funding for PBS children's programming. And it was the senators that were he was talking to were blown away by what he had to say. It was so simple and so pure about just children needing love and guidance.
Yeah.
And it was really great.
And the one senator said,
"You got it.
You got. You convinced me."
Yeah.
I mean, that's it.
Yeah.
You don't see that these days.
No. I remember watching Sesame Street and Mister Rogers. I think at one point they were back to back, but I always remember sitting in the living room watching that. And then my youngest brother is 11 years younger than me, so I kind of revisited it when he was younger as well. And I remember being older, and again sitting in front of the TV just watching Mister Rogers.
It's so amazing, especially that you know there was a time in his life when his sniper victims were stacked like. Cordwood outside of his house,
right? Mm-hmm.
And but here you had the total reversal of that.
He really came
it's
around.
Amazing, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Who was the guy that played the mailman?
Mr. McFeely.
So he used to come into when I worked at the Dilworth Town Inn in Westchester. He used to come into there.
Shut up.
Yeah.
He was from the area?
I guess so. Well, my cousin used to wait on him.
He had family in our area. He lived in Pittsburgh where they did a lot of the filming for Mr. Rogers. And we tried getting him on the show a few years ago, and then he kind of fell into ill health, but I believe he's still alive.
Okay.
Is he?
Yeah.
I know that during the Vietnam War, he was a tunnel rat.
Oh, really?
Pistol. Yep.
Well, yep. Speedy delivery. Yeah, exactly.
Get in there. Speedy delivery. Yep. All right, let's do sports this morning.
Ball sacks are yummy.
The Phillies lost to the Cubs last night at Wrigley Field. Albert Almora Jr. hit his first career grand slam, and the Cubs rallied from an early three-run deficit with three home runs, beating the Phillies 8-4. It was a battle of the Coles as Irvin pitched for the Phils, and former Phils ace Cole Hamels was on the mound for the Cubs. Both starters struggled and didn't make it past the fifth inning. The four-game series wraps up this afternoon. Aaron Nola will get the start for the Phils, and John Lester pitches for the Cubs. First pitch is scheduled for 2:20. In the NBA, the Eastern Conference Finals continues tonight with the series tied at two games apiece. Game 5 between the top two seeds in the East, the Toronto Raptors and the Bucks. It's back in Milwaukee, and tip-off is scheduled for 8:30. In football news, the NFL and NFL Players Association announced agreements aimed at improving players' pain management and maintaining positive mental health, opening the door to formally allowing players to use medical marijuana and cannabis for pain. Pass rusher and former Eagle Chris Long, who announced his retirement over the weekend, is publicly agreeing, saying it's far less dangerous than guzzling a fifth of alcohol and going out after a game. He also admitted that he has been a marijuana user, saying, "I'm not a dry snitch. I'm not going to put a percentage on how much the league smokes, but I certainly enjoyed a fair share on a regular basis throughout my career. A lot of guys get a lot of pain management out of it." And that's what I have for you this morning.
All right, thank you very much, Kathy. You know what? I'm going to start off with a shout out. I normally don't do this at 6 a.m., but I got an email from our buddy Eric Simon in our promotions department. Said he ran into these two fine police officers, or feline.
You are so feline.
Today, picking up some MMRBQ things. He said, huge Preston and Steve fans, Dave and Nick, Rutgers University public safety police officers, working today's graduation at BB&T. I guess this was yesterday. He said they asked for a 6 a.m. hour-ish shout out tomorrow, if possible, but they realize you guys probably get hundreds of these requests a week. Dave's been on board with you since 2002, and they both love the show and think you guys are a great group of folks.
That's awesome. It'd be our pleasure to do that.
There you go, Dave. Your shout out for Dave and Nick, Rutgers University public safety police officers working today at the graduation, BB&T. Cool, man. Thank you, guys. We appreciate it. Before we give you this list of people, and we have a really good show today set up, we got to do our coolest teacher. Yesterday, we had chosen Cherry Hill West High School.
Yes.
And we asked the student body to text in and vote, and they sure did. And we do have a winner. So we are excited to announce the coolest teacher of Cherry Hill West. And that would be Mrs. Bridget Garrity Bantle.
Wow, that's a long name.
Mrs. Bridget Garrity Bantle, congratulations. You are officially the coolest teacher in that building, Cherry Hill West. I'm sure there's a lot of cool people, but you're just a smidge cooler than everybody else.
It says right there she took a work-study field trip to Las Vegas, Preston.
No, it didn't, actually. We found that that's in common with these teachers that win, that they take the kids somewhere. But she, all we know about her, she is a special education teacher and a coach as well. So we'd like to find out more. So, Mrs. Garrity Bantle, if you would like to give us a call, that'd be awesome. We'll hear from you at some point this morning. And we will officially award you the Preston and Steve Coolest Teacher of the Year coffee mug and a whatacrockmeals.com gift card worth $50. So congrats. And maybe we can find out a little bit more about her later on. All right, who gets to pick?
It's Kathy.
It's Kathy's turn.
Very exciting as the large Chinese food takeout box comes around.
All right, Kathy reached in. She's got a name. Kath, who is it going to be?
We are going with, in Northeast Philadelphia, Archbishop Ryan.
Oh! Archbishop Ryan. All right, Ryan. We got you covered, and all you got to do is text in and let us know who you think this coolest teacher of the year was. And I'll say it again, just in case you did not know, this is how you do it. You text the word teacher, followed by the teacher's name to us. Our text number is 39333. One vote per phone number, and we'll give you till about this time tomorrow morning to get those votes in, and we will tally them up, and we will make the announcement. So Archbishop Ryan in Northeast Philadelphia, you're up. Nick?
This school has something that I've never seen before, which is different mascots for the men and the women. The mascot for the men is the Raiders. The mascot for the women is the Ragdolls.
What the hell?
Yeah. Really?
I think we talked about this when we were talking, because I think their mascot is like a Raggedy Ann or something like that.
Okay.
Is that the one? Because we were talking about this a couple of months ago.
Yeah, goofy mascots.
Yeah.
Okay. Raggedy Ann.
Ragdolls.
A ragdoll?
Right. Why not? That's kind of interesting because, you know, from a sports perspective, which I usually think of for a mascot, a ragdoll is something that gets thrown around. Used and abused.
It's like having a Furby.
The Furbies. The
fighting Furbies.
But anyway, it doesn't matter. They're ragdolls and they're proud, and we're happy to have them up there voting now. So whether you're a Raider or a ragdoll, you can vote for the coolest teacher at Archbishop Ryan. Text word teacher followed by the teacher's name, 39333. So get on it. Besides all of that rigmarole going on this morning, we have a number of guests on the program today. We are going to talk to the head coach of the St. Louis Blues and former Flyer and Flyer coach, Craig Berube.
How about that?
So yet another connection to the Stanley Cup. Dude, we'll take it any way we
can. Right. We have
we'll
take to.
It any way we can get it. So, but we'll talk to coach around 8 o'clock. We are also going to have Jannie Scott here in our studio today. She has got her memoir, which is called The Beneficiary, Fortune, Misfortune, and the Story of My Father. And well-known family in the Philadelphia area.
They have a little money.
They got a little money.
Just a little money.
And she's got interesting stories. A movie made back in the 1950s, Steve, I guess, the Philadelphia story.
She's made twice. High Society was made once as a musical and once as with Cary Grant and Katharine Hepburn, and then again with Bing Crosby and Frank Sinatra and Grace Kelly.
Yeah, so, you know, kind of local royalty.
Oh, absolutely. Oh, so Nick's been reading the book. I was flicking through it last night and just, you know, picking up some the expansive wealth, amazing stuff. I mean, the stuff that there's so much in Pennsylvania that would not exist without this family. Yeah. It's astonishing.
I was at the Devereaux Golf Outing a little while back. They do amazing work. And the main beneficiary was Jannie Scott.
Yeah.
Be here this morning, which is very cool. So some really wonderful philanthropic things are done through that family as well. We also have comedian Two Ray stopping by, going to be at Punchline Philly. And we're also going to have Lance Reddick from John Wick Chapter 3, Parabellum, joining us too.
So he's awesome. If you've seen any of the movies, he is the guy working the counter at the Continental. He is the the concierge.
So he'll be joining us later on today too. So we have a lot to get to. Let's take a break. Come back. I'll roll out the entertainment stories. I have a bunch there too. So stay with us. We're having a good time. Guarantee you.
Love MMR. Buy some gear. Check out the Rock Shop at WMMR.com. Snazzy.
Say goodbye to juggling paper coupons and missing out on the best deals. Download the Acme mobile app today to have your own personal grocery guru right in your pocket. Use it to plan your shopping list like a pro. Get personalized deals on the products you buy most and choose your shopping style. Whether it's in-store, delivery, or drive-up, where an experienced Acme associate will carefully select, bag your order, even pick up your prescriptions from the pharmacy and bring it all right to your car. Acme. Fresh foods, local flavors.
Back with more of the Preston and Steve Show podcast.
We have a stupid question, 4-pack of Big Apple Circus tickets to give away. If you can answer this question, it has to do with the game Backgammon.
Love it.
I used to know how to play that game, and then years ago, I went and tried it again, and I have no idea how to play that game.
It's my wife taught it to me. She loves the game.
Yeah.
And I tried and tried and tried, and I stink at it, and therefore I hate it.
It's not hard. I learned it in just a few minutes.
I'm an idiot. Yeah. I just can't follow. I lose attention quickly.
So here you go. What is the term for bearing off all your pieces before your opponent has borne off any of theirs? I guess they call it bearing off. 215-263-WMMR. Let's even know the name of that. What is the term for bearing off all your pieces before your opponent has borne off any of theirs? Do you know that term, Casey?
No. Right. I didn't actually learn terms.
Okay,
you just play.
The gameplay.
You're a purist.
215-263-WMMR. Call now. Let's see if you know the answer. I will go through some birthdays on this date while we await your answer. Today is Thursday, May 23rd, and we have Drew Carey, who's celebrating a birthday today.
Anybody see Price is Right recently?
That used to be, like, if I was home or near TV at 11 o'clock on a weekday, that was my go-to.
When you were sick in school, Price is Right was guaranteed.
I was never sick at school, but on days off and stuff, yes. I am not as inclined to go there without Bob Barker as my host.
Yeah, me too. It's sad to say, and I liked Drew Carey, but I just never got into it.
I know. He just had something. I saw a picture of Bob. He's had a couple of falls and it hasn't been very good recently. But Drew Carey gets it done, but Bob had the magic.
Now, Whose Line Is It Anyway? I used to love that show.
There you go.
He is 61.
Man, he's been the host of Price is Right since 2007.
That's amazing.
It's 12 years, hard to believe. Yeah, I still think of Bob Barker's the host.
I saw him one night. I remember, never forget the episode. It was Price is Right Primetime. And it was one, I forget which one, where you flick the thing and you win $1 million.
There was like $1 million prize. Yeah.
And Preston, I'm just sitting there and I'm like half listening. I'm eating a sandwich or something. And, you won $1 million. I could not believe it was so casual.
I don't know if this will be used tomorrow or not, but Casey apparently has purchased something for me.
Yeah.
And what? Is it not what you wanted?
No, you be the judge.
Casey was
going to
try it for Keenan's tomorrow for the live broadcast. No,
it's not.
I'm already looking at it.
I'm so disappointed.
Casey wanted to order the same microphone that Bob Barker would use on The Price is Right.
Does not work?
Hang on a second. So Bob always called it the lavalier mic, which is, I always thought was the one that you actually, clipped to yourself. But he called it the lavalier mic, and it was that long, skinny microphone.
Yeah. Casey got
one that's more of a gooseneck microphone, so it's not the same thing. He's just holding it.
Do you want to bring it anyway?
Bring it anyway, Preston.
It works.
No, because the whole idea, I'm trying to move this around now, and it bends.
Yeah, and it swings.
Of having the long microphone is that you can swing it around.
Right.
Sorry, Case.
So, I know. I'm so mad. Believe me, when I opened the box, I was like, "This."
Wait a second.
All right. Well, hang on a second. Well, maybe it just screws together.
Casey, it says on the box, novelty microphone.
Yeah.
You know, it'd be great, Casey. We could hook it on. We're going to use a strap-on tomorrow for something. We could hook it onto the strap-on.
Yeah.
And it could be a mic that you could wear
Talking to the microphone.
Yes, speaking to the microphone. There we go. I think that might work. All right. Well, anyway.
Is there a way to rig it, like with some tape or something like that, so it wouldn't bend?
I don't think so.
You know what? We can get the actual mic. It was, hold on to it. Maybe we can use it for something else. But it's not a Bob Barker mic.
So, man. Drew Carey, 61. Joan Collins, the actress, who was on Dynasty. Of course.
Yeah, she was just, I guess she has a book out or something, or gave an interview. And she says that on that show, Dynasty, she and John Forsythe hated each other.
I believe it. Yeah, she had some a little bit of toot, I guess.
Yeah, yeah.
I tell you what, when she was 50 years old, she did Playboy, and I used that issue a lot. I had a thing for her.
She looked great.
Kathy has a horrible look on her face. I'm sorry, you look like you just smelled something horrible.
You have to. It's just what you have to do.
Well, I'm kidding.
Would you get it for the articles?
I loved her. She was a slutty MILF. That's all I could
say.
Slutty
MILF.
That's what she came off as, and mainly because her character, which was, what the hell was her character's
Alexis.
Name? Was it Alexis?
Yeah.
Okay. Or I thought that was the other one. I thought that
Alexis
was the blonde.
Carrington Colby.
Okay. What was the blonde's name?
Linda Evans.
Linda Evans. Yeah, but her character's name.
Oh, what the hell?
She also went by Linda Evans.
Crystal.
Crystal, yes.
Anyway, she was hot.
And yeah, and you used her.
She's 86 now.
Do you think, from just the memory of that alone, do you think you could work up something
right
now?
Work something up? Not right now, but I'm sure if I have some time to myself.
This bank, and I would figure
privacy.
There's a lot of interest on that deposit.
I didn't watch the show, but did her character... Was her character slutty?
She was a seductress. She wasn't
married.
No, she was a businesswoman, a seductress.
Maybe seductress is better than slut.
So yeah, than a slut.
I'm sorry. I'm using the wrong words.
There's a new slut in town.
But I remembered she had this black lingerie, lacy thing on the
cover.
She
looked great.
And she looked wonderful. I think it had a zipper in the crotch, if I remember correctly. Yeah, the spank bank still works.
Yeah, there you go. It's working.
So she's 86. Jewel, the singer-songwriter, is 45. Always liked her.
She's the one with the teeth, right?
Yeah.
You know what, though? I dig her snaggle tooth.
Cute.
Yeah.
She's 45 today. I dig your snaggle tooth.
I dig her horseshoe crab eating snaggle tooth.
What a wonderful backhanded compliment.
Yeah. She's the one with the teeth.
We also have Charles Kimbrough. He was on Murphy Brown. He played Jim Dial, who I think was the anchor, stiff anchor guy.
The Ted Knight kind of guy.
Yeah, he's 83. And then the last birthday I saw is German director Tom Tykwer. He gave us Cloud Atlas most recently, but also did Run Lola Run, Perfume, The Story of a Murder. I don't know.
Hey, he's a loser.
He's 54 years old today. I heard Cloud Atlas was weird.
It was weird. I did not, I was not a big fan.
Okay. All right, we'll see if we know the answer to the stupid question this morning. It has to do with the game of backgammon. What is the term for bearing off all of your pieces before your opponent has borne off any of theirs? And I will go to Laura, see if we can get the answer. Good morning, Laura.
Good morning.
Laura, what is it called when you bear off all your pieces before your opponent has borne off any of theirs?
It's called a gammon.
As in backgammon.
Oh!
Yes.
It's obvious.
One moment, Laura. We'll gather your information, and we're going to get you tickets for, in fact, a four-pack of tickets for a Big Apple Circus. Don't miss the all-new show critics are calling magical and astonishing. Big Apple Circus is back now through June 16th at the Greater Philadelphia Expo Center at Oaks. And tickets at BigAppleCircus.com are available. I have a lot of stuff, so let's get right to it. Wendy Williams' son, Kevin Hunter Jr., has reportedly been arrested for assaulting his father, Kevin Hunter Sr.
Wow.
Sources tell TMZ that Kevin Sr. has been pressuring his 18-year-old son to carve out his own path to success, but that their discussions came to a head after midnight Wednesday over a separate financial matter. Kevin Jr. reportedly assaulted Kevin Sr., but dad told TMZ, I love my son very much, and I will not be pursuing this matter legally. Things are not always how they appear.
This is this is a troubled family, clearly.
Wendy had reportedly taken Kevin Jr. to his New Jersey home to pick something up, not knowing that Kevin Sr. was there. Wendy had moved out of that into a new pad in New York City last month. She dropped him off with plans to pick him up shortly thereafter. But in between, things got tense between father and son. While things went fine at first between the father and son, they ended up going to a store shortly after midnight Wednesday where they got into a fight, reportedly over Kevin Sr.'s demand for spousal support. Kevin Sr. reportedly put Jr. in a headlock, at which point Jr. punched him in the nose to break the hold.
It had to be like a convenience store,
yeah,
right? It's after midnight.
It was out in public.
They're beating the crap out of each other in a 7-Eleven?
I don't know. Williams filed for divorce in April after widespread reports of infidelity on his part, and she fired him as the show's executive producer and has since asked for spousal support and child support, and I guess that's where this whole thing got into a bit of a tip.
So the son is clearly siding with Wendy.
Sounds like it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Natalie Portman is not here for Moby's creepy claim that they once were an item. In a recent memoir called Then It Fell Apart, Moby claims that he briefly dated Natalie Portman when she was 20 years old and he was 33 after flirting in his dressing room. Now, he described this whole thing as kissing under the centuries-old oak trees. Okay. This is Casey's version of Moby music, by the way.
Being caught in a pouring rain.
All right, so anyway,
that was actually worth it.
Where was I?
You were talking about the dating.
Kissing under the centuries-old oak trees at Harvard University. At midnight, she brought me to her dorm room, and we lay down next to each other on her small bed. After she fell asleep, I carefully extracted myself from her arms and took a taxi back to my hotel. Now, by his own account, the romance ended because, quote, I wanted one thing, for me to be alone. Nothing triggered my panic attacks more than getting close to a woman I cared about. Now, Natalie is responding, telling Harper's Bazaar that not only did it never happen, she was actually 18 at the time. She said, I was surprised to hear that he characterized the very short time that I knew him as dating, because my recollection is a much older man being creepy with me when wow. I just had graduated high school. He said, I was 20. I definitely wasn't. I was a teenager. I had just turned 18. There was no fact-checking from him or his publisher, and it almost feels deliberate, she said.
Wow. So this is an object lesson in how a guy and a girl can read a situation much differently.
Absolutely. Moby, apparently, is nonplussed by Portman's denial. He took to Instagram to share a photo of them together, and then he wrote, I recently read a gossip piece wherein Natalie Portman said that we never dated. This confused me, as we did, in fact, date. And after briefly dating in 1999, we remained friends for years. I like Natalie, and I respect her intelligence and activism, but to be honest, I can't figure out why she would actively misrepresent the truth about our, albeit brief, involvement. He said, the story, as laid out in my book, Then It Fell Apart, is accurate, with lots of corroborating photo evidence, etc.
Look at this horrifying picture here.
I know. He's doing this really stiff,
smile,
weird-looking smile.
Kathy, do you think that... if you were to look back over the people you dated, are you resolutely clear on who you dated and who was just a friend?
Yes.
Of course you are.
Yeah. I remember I went to my high school reunion this last time, which was the 30-year reunion, and I ran into a girl I hadn't seen in ages and ages. And I remember we made out one
yes.
night. And I mentioned that to her. She's like, I don't think so. I think I would have remembered that. And I'm like, yeah, we did.
She was like, oh, God, I want to forget this.
Yeah, clearly she had.
Oh, my God, I made out with her mother.
She suppressed the memory. But, you know, I mean, I think if you go back some years, sometimes it's a little fuzzy.
And, you know what I do? I pick up the phone and let her know you're in the new band Saint.
And also misrepresenting.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know.
But maybe if there was alcohol involved and it was just like a little make-out session, maybe that I could see. Maybe
she wouldn't
remember.
In this case, he's saying they were boyfriend-girlfriend.
No, I mean Preston's case.
Yeah. But I don't know. She says no dice. He says yes. Who knows?
Well, quick question.
Yeah.
Do you think you would remember if you had made out with Moby?
It depends on how much I had to drink.
Okay. All right. So fair enough.
What's weird here is it's semantics, right? Because dating, right?
Right.
So I, quote-unquote, dated a girl in college. If you were to ask her, no, we never dated because she didn't want
to. She had a restraining order.
She had a, quote-unquote, restraining order.
Right, right, yeah.
Okay.
It's what they, quote-unquote, defense attorney,
yes.
quote-unquote, jail time. Yeah.
Quote-unquote, 100 yards. Yeah. I don't buy it.
Quote-unquote, crisis counselor.
Yeah.
"Quote unquote," dusting for fingerprints.
But I mean, the reality is, we slept together many, 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 many
times.
Did
you "quote unquote" sleep together, yeah. or did you have "quote unquote" intercourse?
We "quote unquote" did everything that a boyfriend and girlfriend does,
right?
And she didn't want a "quote unquote" label to it.
Okay.
All right. So if you were to talk to her today,
you were F buddies.
Yeah.
Yeah.
According to her.
Yeah.
Okay.
You know?
Except Casey was madly in love and dating her.
Madly in love. Why am I going to love you so much?
I was quote unquote madly in love.
Oh, that's funny.
But we didn't, you know, like F-buddies don't go out on dates.
No,
right?
You were like a human F-buddies, vibrator. That's
yeah,
what you were.
Yeah. F-buddies don't like, they just, meet at the end of the night. And they have.
They don't hold hands. Mm-hmm. They have dinner and go to movies and things like that.
And whisper sweet nothings and pitch woo.
But.
Or tell anybody about the relationship.
Yes. Or hire defense attorneys.
But anyway, so these are semantics. So maybe in his mind, we went out and got some coffee or a froyo or whatever.
And that's a date to him?
That's a date.
He's a weird little dude. Well, she's saying no dice. All right, we're moving on. Notoriously difficult to please, Deborah Tate is here for Margot Robbie's portrayal of her murdered sister, the actress Sharon Tate in Quentin Tarantino's Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. So this is actually kind of a big deal. She had told TMZ that she was worried that Sharon would come off as an egomaniac, but that Margot managed to pull it off. She said, depending on how Margot played it, it could have appeared egotistical, but no, she did a beautiful job. Sharon did not have an egotistical bone in her body. Margot captures Sharon's sweetness very nicely.
And she, as you're right, she's has been very protective of her sister's reputation.
Yeah, she's become notorious for savaging stars who have depicted her sister. She called Hilary Duff's portrayal of Sharon classless and exploitive, saying that it doesn't matter who is acting in it, it's just tasteless. It's classless how everyone is rushing to release something for the 50th anniversary of this horrific event. When she had learned that Tarantino was considering Jennifer Lawrence for the role of Sharon, she said, not that I have anything against her, but she's not pretty enough to play Sharon. That's a horrible thing to say, but, you know, I have my standards. But she approves Margot Robbie's portrayal of her in this movie. So I'm very interested. The more I'm hearing about this, the more it sounds like it's going to be a great movie.
I told you yesterday the reviewers, a lot of the reviewers are saying it's his best movie since Pulp Fiction.
Wow.
Yep.
That's saying a lot. So we shall see. Speaking of movies, both Elton John and Bernie Taupin were moved to tears while watching the new Elton biopic Rocket Man, which opens on May 31st. Elton and Bernie talked about the effect that the movie had on them both. Elton said, I never thought in my 73rd year that I'd be sitting here in Cannes with a film coming out. To be honest with you, I was blown away. I was very moved, and I cried the first time I saw it, and I cried a lot this time. And then Bernie said, it was a wonderful experience, and I echo Elton's feelings 100%. I mean, it was very emotional. There were a couple of scenes in it where I was quietly sobbing, to be quite honest, he said.
So, okay, we've had now Bohemian Rhapsody with Freddie Mercury. We've had this. If you were to put together a wish list of next biopic to be done on a rock star or a rock band story, what would you vote for?
Right Said Fred.
Right Said Fred is awesome.
Yeah.
Especially that moment when they first discover mesh shirts.
Yeah, and how sexy they are.
Yeah, they're too sexy.
I know. That's a good question.
I've said it several times, but for me, it's Fleetwood Mac. There's so much interplay among the band, romance, breakups, love lost, and great music.
Yeah, true. There's a lot of drama there, no question.
You know what I'd like to see? And I think it'd be a great romance, the Moby and Natalie Portman story.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Obviously. Very passionate.
Yeah. That is a great question, Steve. One I'll have to ponder.
All right, ponder. But right now we're sticking with Right Said Fred.
Moving along, Kylie Jenner and Caitlyn Jenner seem to have cleared up any issues they have had over reported plans to launch competing skincare lines because Caitlyn was front and center for the launch of Kylie Skin.
All right, ladies, here's what you do first. Take out the belt sander and apply gently to the skin.
Kylie reportedly shut down Caitlyn's planned skincare launch in February.
Here's a great way to remove pimples. It's called an X-Acto knife.
Oh, gross.
She has a higher pain tolerance.
Kim, Chloe, Courtney, and Chris were there as well. The whole crew wore pink and were all smiles Tuesday at the Goya Studios.
Oh, boy.
Kendall Jenner was MIA, being across the world for the Cannes Film Festival. The all-pink bash included a roller skating rink and junk food.
How exciting.
Oh, my God. They ate junk food?
They ate junk food. Mm-hmm. James Charles, who
they did
was,
just like the commoners do, they roller skate.
James Charles, who was embroiled in a public feud with fellow influencer and mentor YouTuber Tati Westbrook, until they buried the hatchet, was also present, as were influencers Nikita Dragon and Gabriel Zamora.
This whole world of influencers is crazy, and the amount of money they're making. I know. But the amount of money some of these higher, like the what's the first name you mentioned, James?
James Charles.
So here's a guy who I think he identifies as a man, but he's like a cosmetics whiz, and yeah. He puts on makeup and he looks
astonishing. Who it is. I know who he is. Yes.
In fact, I think he has a contract with CoverGirl or something.
Okay.
So he got into a battle with another influencer that's a makeup whiz.
I hate that word.
I know.
Influencer, as opposed to entertainer. You know who, you know,
right?
But they're not.
I'm influencing you.
But they're not entertainers, right?
Oh, I know they're not. I'm just saying that now we have influencers.
And
as opposed to columnists and advice, you know, givers and so on, they're influencers.
They're influencing
Look
you.
Look like
what,
me.
Yeah.
Do what I do.
Yeah. So there's a local influencer, but she is known across the country, and she just has her own line of clothing now in Nordstrom.
Is that wild?
That's a big deal.
That's pretty amazing.
That's a very big deal.
Yeah.
Yeah. To get a clothing line in a retailer like that.
Based off of your influencing.
You got to be the real deal.
Based on your Instagram influencing.
Jesus. I have pictures of cats.
Several high-profile celebs, including Kylie, unfollowed James.
What?
As a result of this dispute. She took photos with him at her party, but does not appear to have refollowed him, by the way.
Well, there's an issue. I think I think last tally was like 1.5 to 2 million followers dropped out on him.
Oh, wow.
No way.
He's only got 15.3 million left.
The guy's hurting.
Yeah. By the way, Sophia Hutchins, Caitlin's girlfriend, and Corey Gamble, Chris's boyfriend, were also there.
It was great to have them there.
Yeah. So the 21-year-old's products were available as of 9 a.m. Yesterday.
It's a wonderful time, Preston. At the end of the evening, I did my strongman act.
You did? Oh, were you bend horseshoes and things like that?
I took a tire iron and bent it into a heart.
Aw.
Did you rip a phone book apart?
Absolutely. Okay, with my uterus. Well, you know, it's after factory.
Well, I was going to say. Yeah.
You've got also a paper shredder.
Right.
Wow.
Do you have any sensitive documents?
Just put them here.
Yeah. It cuts both ways, crosswise and lengthwise, so you can't tape it back together.
Okay, and even we'll take care of staples if they're in there, too?
Yes, and floppy disks.
Okay, wow. That's old school.
Old school.
Someone has changed their hair.
Oh! Yes!
What an exciting time. The upcoming reunion of the Spice Girls is on the way, and apparently it's a very big deal in the UK. Tickets have they've had extra dates that had to be added, and also you can spend the night in the original Spice Girls bus from the movie Spice World,
which I'm a fan of.
I am too.
I enjoyed it, and to explain it and to defend ourselves, Preston, it was a. It was like
Hard Day's Night.
Yeah, it's the whole idea of it.
And the girls are really hot.
Yes.
That's part of
that
it, too.
So
you can do that. And now, just to keep the momentum going, Jerry Halliwell has gone and transformed herself back into the ginger spice we all know and love, thanks to a little bit of help from L'Oreal Paris.
Well, she looks really good.
She does. She was blonde for the longest time, but she has gone back to the nostalgic bright red shade that she was famous for.
I like this.
I think they're all aging wonderfully. I hope they don't try to go crazy and fight it with collagen and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Kathy has a really good method for Botox. You just don't apply it.
That's right. You just run.
Just don't use it.
Screaming from the doctor's office.
And the look of terror on your face locks your skin in.
Yes, it tightens your skin a bit.
It just locks. It gets rid of your wrinkles because your mouth is open as you're screaming.
Right. Exactly.
She caps in the picture with just three words. Ginger is back. The good news is that the dye she used on her hair is an at-home color. So if you want to channel your inner Spice Girl, you can do that.
It's made from whale blood, Preston.
You can do that with L'Oreal Infina Preference Hair Color in 74 Mango. That's what it's called.
Wow. Real quick, just sort of stay on this ginger thing. Is ginger red? Like, when we were talking about figging, we had pictures of ginger here in the studio. Was it red?
Oh, you're talking about the spice.
No, I think the ginger comes from Gilligan's Island, does it not?
Is that what that is?
That's what I thought it
okay.
was.
Okay, probably. But
ginger had red hair.
Yeah, but I didn't know if that was before the term. I never knew. I don't know.
Because ginger itself isn't red.
No.
Yeah.
Know. It's kind of yellowish, actually.
Right.
That's
a good question. It's got to be the Gilligan thing.
Yeah,
right?
I assume.
It's just got to.
It's just...
Guys, it's gotta.
Casey wants to say something to the room. Guys, it just gotta be, right?
Nick is looking it up.
Is it possible, Preston, that when the ginger comes out, it's covered in blood?
No, I don't think so.
All right.
It has to do with ginger from Gilligan's. It also has to do with ginger snaps, believe it or not.
Okay.
Which reddish, are reddish.
Brownish red. Yeah. Ginger sure. cake, yeah. And then ginger cake, despite the fact that, and then ginger flour.
Okay, so maybe they took all that and ginger was a term, and then when they made the character, it just really exploded, possibly. So I don't know. We could kick that one around forever, folks, but we're going to move on.
We're letting that Geo handle
it. Yeah, we are. So let's see. It's the beginning of the end for Orange is the New Black. Netflix has announced that the show's seventh and final season will drop globally on Friday, July 26th. There's only been seven seasons.
I can't believe there's been seven seasons. Is she still in jail, by the way? The whatever.
Does anybody watch it?
Taylor Schilling, I bailed.
Here's the deal.
Yeah, me too.
Orange is the New Black. Wasn't that the first show to release the entire series in one
in
shot?
In one shot.
To my recollection, you could watch it was the first that I remember them making a big deal about. There may have been one or two before on Netflix where they did that, but they made a big deal about you being able to instantly access the entire series.
And they didn't do that from the very beginning, did they? Like, wasn't the first couple of seasons...
I don't know.
Episode by episode, and then when people started going crazy over it, they started releasing.
I'm still
the
thinking about ginger snaps.
Right. Yeah.
I thought it was out longer than 7 years ago, but I may be off on that. But
we actually talked to the woman who is the author of the source material.
Yeah, Jenji Cohen. We also talked to Taylor Schilling, and they're both good interviews. Yeah, it debuted in 2013.
Huh. Okay, well,
I just can't believe she's still in jail.
Like, she was supposed to do like
90
months.
Yeah, she's got the worst lawyer ever. I made a big mistake.
So it will drop globally Friday, July 26th, and a video announcement of the premiere. Cast members are singing Regina Spektor's series theme song. The final season will trace the ladies of Litchfield as they confront how life in prison has changed them and how it affects their approach to life on the outside. And we'll do one more story and then we'll move on. You know what? In fact, we don't even have time for that.
No, really? You're teased.
It's no big deal.
All right.
Let's do the next one. Will Smith. In fact, it had to do with Will Smith. So we'll just move on to this. Will Smith has big shoes to fill portraying the genie in a live-action remake of Aladdin. In this clip, he mentions why he has the spirit within him.
The idea behind the genie, sort of how the genie defines love and how the genie defines service, is by helping Aladdin or helping people become the greatest version of themselves. I have that desire to be a genie in my real life. I like how it feels to be able to help people learn and grow and become the best version of themselves.
Shut the fuck up!
So now the expanded trailers have come out, and I don't think he looks as creepy as it did in that very first run of trailers.
No,
he looks good.
And he looks likable. And so the reviews fall in sort of the mid-level. Okay. And I remember they were sort of the same way for Beauty and the Beast, which I love. Mm-hmm. So I might give this a shot.
He is, or Aladdin, is in theaters tomorrow, by the way. So if you want to see it over the holiday weekend, it'll be there for you. Here's the next clip. So the newest trailer for the highly anticipated Toy Story 4 dropped yesterday. It shows viewers more of the new homemade toy Sporky. And here, producer Jonas Rivera explains how this unique character fits into the series.
This little toy doesn't know the rules of Toy Story. And that just, you know, he doesn't know to lie down when the parents come into the room and so forth. And that just felt like a worthy thing to chase down. And it made us laugh. Just that kids can make something and call it a toy and love it. And that's what makes it a toy.
Toy Story 4 will be in theaters on June 24th. First.
Did you have a similar toy? Did you ever build a toy that you were a big fan of?
I can't remember.
I built a doll, like a hybrid of G.I. Joe and a few other things.
Yeah
and I remember loving that.
I probably did. And, of course, you made all kinds of crafts at school and stuff like that you would take home. But, yeah, I made a little puppet one time.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Quirky.
Quirky?
That was his name.
Aww.
That's a good name.
Quirky the Clown. Yep, exactly. So, thanks, Steve.
Yeah, man.
I needed that little memory, right? I forgot about Gorky.
After we learned all that horrible stuff about ginger snaps.
Yeah. I miss you.
I need to be alone.
He touched me here.
Oh, my God.
Yo. Is that what he used Gorky for?
Exactly. Where did he touch you?
Right here where Gorky's pee-pee is.
Jesus. Okay, so you know what I'd like to do? I want to give away some movie passes, Godzilla, King of Monsters. We got that screening coming up on Tuesday. It'll be, it's an early one, okay? 5 p.m. at the UA Riverview IMAX. We'll take five callers. We'll give you the passes, 215-263-WMMR. Get on board. Don't forget Archbishop Ryan High School in Northeast Philadelphia. You get to choose who the coolest teacher of the year has been. So text the word teacher, followed by the teacher's name, to 39333. One vote per phone number. So get on that and let us know who you think the winner should be. By the way, our coolest teacher from Cherry Hill West was named this morning. Special education teacher and coach, Mrs. Bridget Garrity Bantle. So we congratulate her. Prize is coming her way. Maybe we'll hear from her at some point this morning. We're going to take a break. We'll be back. We are going to have the coach of the St. Louis Blues, former Flyer, not only player, but coach as well. Craig Berube will be on the program. Jani Scott will be in our studio today. She has a book out.
Amazing story about her family.
And Toure, the comedian, will be on the show. And also we have Lance Reddick from John Wick Chapter 3. So a whole lot to stick around for. We'll be right back.
The Preston and Steve Show podcast. 93.3 WMMR. Everything that rocks.
Craig Berube, head coach of the St. Louis Blues, former Flyer, is going to be joining us around 8 o'clock. We're going to have Jani Scott in the studio. Toure is coming by. Lance Reddick from John Wick Chapter 3. A lot happening on today's program.
Huge.
And then we take the show on the road tomorrow morning for the official opening of the Jersey Shore. Kenan's in North Wildwood. We'll do the live broadcast tomorrow for Eggs with Peg. And should be a spectacle. Always is.
The amount of planning, it can only go horribly wrong.
Yeah. All the things that we have ready to go usually fall apart by the time we get there. But we'll see. And we always, always have a good time.
Yes. So that's the constant.
We can count on that. I did not know this. I guess Marissa had texted us last night, but I didn't see this. But apparently Monica Malkpass of 6ABC is retiring or leaving 6ABC. Do we know?
If this it's says retiring? She's decided to move on.
Okay.
After 31 years.
At 6ABC.
Yeah.
Wow.
She's awesome.
Yeah, she's great. That's a long run.
Yeah. So, Kathy, what you were saying, and I didn't see much of any announcement about it, but that she wants to spend time with her family?
Yeah. So, I mean, they did post it on their website. So I think it's it seems to be an amicable
They're not
departure.
Throwing her out. Yeah.
Yeah. But her statement said, I've decided to move on, but it's with mixed emotions that I leave after more than 31 years. I have loved being your anchor woman. This is a wonderful place to live, work, and raise a family. It was certainly a difficult decision to make, but I'm excited to spend more time with my young family while I choose the next great opportunity.
I think she might have been my first crush as far as
TV personality.
Local TV personalities are concerned. Yeah.
Wow, it's a picture of her really young.
Yeah. Oh my
she
goodness.
She looks adorable.
She looks like a teenager.
Yeah.
But so she says she's exploring potential national and international opportunities and assessing what is best for her family and her career.
Sounds like she wants to be a secret agent.
Ooh, you never know.
Is that what she sounds like?
That music is one of the first things. I told you, the first thing I do is say hello to my Quip electric toothbrush. Uh-huh. But I have a TV in the bathroom, and it's one of the first things that I catch every single morning is that theme song.
Do you make sure your Quip can see the TV?
No.
Okay.
That's
very rude. Very
that's
rude.
Not nice. No, but I can see the TV from the shower. So I do watch 6ABC because we're tight with the morning crew over there.
Well, we've worked for, we had been working for years to get her to come visit the show. And I think the first time we managed to pull it off, as with everyone in news or anyone who has a career they'd like to hold on to, they're usually reticent to come by the show. Mm-hmm. So, but it took a while. And then I think the first time we had her was for the Camp Out for Hunger, right?
Yeah, definitely.
At the Adams Mark?
It was at the Metroplex, I believe.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
I have my picture with her. I can't remember what was in the background. So okay. I think it was Metroplex. Is she done? That's it? Or did she? Is she?
Well, no. Meaning, did she already do her last day?
She signed off last night.
No kidding.
Well, that's how quick. Rude.
How rude. Should have done a nice send off.
I feel robbed then because I was too busy nodding off like an idiot.
No, I remember we had Dave Roberts on shortly after he. had retired. That was very, very cool. We had Vernon Odom on when he had celebrated 40 years. What?
So Vernon Odom leaves and Monica Malpass leaves.
Ooh.
You know what that means.
Coincidence?
What does it mean?
It means they're going to travel the world together.
Is that what they're going to do?
Yeah.
Be international spies?
Spies.
Yeah, that'd be so cool.
Work for the NSA?
Vernon would occasionally do things that were hilarious. Like mm-hmm. he was just subtle funny, and I don't even think it was ever intentional, but he would just have moments. I think it's just something where you get to know these news personalities over the years, and you're like, all right. Vernon's got a sense of humor because he's so dry in his delivery, but he has his moments.
Yeah.
I love that he would just read from his notebook.
His legal pad.
Yeah.
Stare right down at it.
Old school. Have the notes written down and really delivered. I liked Monica's chemistry with Rick Williams.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep.
Solid.
He's nice. Absolutely. I ran into a few months back Shari Williams. I'd never met her before, and she was walking by, I was in an Acme, and I go, Shari!
Oh, boy.
Hey! I was just so shocked to see her. I'm like, you're the only one I haven't met from there. I come over and said hi. She actually wants to come on our show sometime, and I said, well, when we have...
Why, yes, I'll come on your show.
Yes, sure.
No, she emailed
she was
me
good?
The next day.
Oh, really?
She emailed me and said, hey, I'd love to stop by, and she's... very beautiful. She's a great anchor, and we can have her by anytime.
Sure. Well, there you go. Sometimes when you approach them at a supermarket, it can get dicey.
31 years. I wonder if, I assume, you know, we get the highest compliment that we get, I think, are emails that say, hey, you guys are like family to me.
Love it.
Or you feel like we're really close friends. I'm like, well, that's it. That's what we want to connect with the audience like that. And I got to feel that news anchors have the same type of thing, right?
Yeah. I mean, they're like, you know, they say you're welcoming them into your home. And 6ABC, I think, has kind of grabbed that the most out of all of the stations.
Well, for the year, how many years, you know?
And that's one of the reasons why they've been on so long.
I don't know why and how they do that over 6ABC. Find the people that have, like, that staying power.
Well, the people that don't have it are moved out. I mean, mm-hmm. you have to prove yourself.
Sure.
And then you have people that come in, I mean, you know, that have the staying power and the skill set. That's the hardest thing in the world is to bring someone into a market.
Yeah.
And, you know, have them click, you know. Sometimes they just don't work with the population or, you know, they have a different vibe or they... It's a tough thing to do.
My friend.
That's why it fails so often.
Yeah, my friend from college is a news anchor, and she, I don't know where she is now. She was like down, maybe Florida, Kentucky, somewhere south of here. I would love to see her up here. I think that would be cool.
Make it happen.
Yeah.
Monica Malpass went to the University of North Carolina. She worked down there for a little bit, and then she came up to Philadelphia. She's been here for 31 years, but she I didn't know this. She has a master's degree from Villanova University that she got in 1999.
Nova. Okay.
Another Villanova chick.
Have they indicated who is going to replace her?
No, I don't think so. That?
Do you think it's hard to make the leap from ship anchor to news anchor?
That's a good question, seeing that one is not a person.
Yes. So there are obvious obstacles.
Yeah, that's a really good question.
I'm just thinking in the industry, or do they frown on that?
No.
Oh, I see here you worked as a ship anchor.
Right.
And then they don't answer.
Right. Listen,
it's a ship anchor.
Right. No. It's an important role.
He's cold and removed.
But grounded.
Yeah.
Very much so.
We can't get him out of the seat.
No, you can't. He won't budge.
I'll be here every night because I weigh 19 tons.
Yeah. Anyhow, good luck to you, Monica Malpass.
Here's your tribute.
And all your further endeavors.
I just thought, career-wise, that'd be a difficult move. But we got to get her in.
All right, let's work on that.
Maybe she wants to come out to Keenan's.
Hey, what's the name of the end theme? What is the name of that? Move closer to
your world, my friends.
Take
a little bit of time.
Closer to your world, my friends, and you'll
by the way, just a quick side note on that. I think at this point, have we not earned 3 seconds in that opening montage?
I asked about that years
ago. They show
ago.
Every slob eating a piece of pizza. They can't show us for a second.
And actually, they had there were some interest shown in that, and I never followed up on it.
Really? I thought differently. I thought they were like kind of laughed, and they were like, yeah, okay.
Do you know, I heard this, and this is probably just gossip, but I heard that that's one of the main reasons Monica Malpass is leaving, is they would not put us in the
opening. Put us in there.
No, I talked to Monsel over there and said, hey, this was a long time ago. Maybe, you know, do a little shot of us in the studio. He's like, oh, it's not a bad idea.
We should have Nick Murphy do an entire montage of just our show and send it over and say, feel free to use any of these clips. Sure.
Show you, Kathy, on a, like a crab boat, you know.
You know, they changed that.
With a slicker on.
You know, they changed that on the first day of the new season. I'm pretty sure.
Yeah, they always do. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, so when as soon as it spring rolls around, it's a whole new set.
Sure. I want to know how long they've been doing it, because in 1993, we had a pep rally in my high school with a giant bonfire, and our high school made it, and it literally lasted maybe 2 seconds tops. But wow, it was such an exciting thing for our high school to be in the montage for Action News.
You remember this a few years ago, and 6ABC did not like it at all, and they put the kibosh on it, but it was hilarious.
Yeah.
As opposed to these wonderful moments of somebody, you know, handing a soft pretzel to someone, or, you know, the museum steps and everything. It was like car crashes and explosions all being punctuated with the musical hits in that theme, and it was hilarious.
It was awesome.
They didn't like it, and they got that yanked, I think, after.
Was it Philly centric?
It was all sorts of, just stock footage, okay, but it was funny. Yeah. It was just
a house blowing up.
It was so hyperkinetic. And it cracked us up.
Yeah, it was hilarious. So
we got in trouble for posting that, but
did we?
We did. Yeah, they asked us to take it down. We kept it up.
We get in trouble a few times a year.
Yeah.
We're not doing our job if we don't.
Yeah.
Best of luck to Monica Malpass, and we'll put the feelers out and see if we can get her in here sometime in the near future. Also, speaking of ABC, last night I didn't even realize it was on, and I happened to stumble across it right before it started, was the All in the Family and Jefferson's live performance with Norman Lear, and Jimmy Kimmel was hosting it. And,
yes. I realized it was on. I sat down to watch it. I saw about a minute and a half, and then woke up about an hour and a half later.
Did you really?
Yeah.
I watched all of the All in the Family and part of Jefferson's, because I was tired and ready to go to bed. The Jeffersons, I thought, was more fun than the
Better?
All in the Family episode. Yeah. And Jamie Foxx was hilarious as George Jefferson. He was doing all those movements, the walk and the,
right,
you know, his head movements and all that stuff.
Wanda Sykes, right?
She was okay.
She was okay.
She was okay as Florence, yeah. She was Wheezy, sorry.
Actually, Florence was Florence. They brought back.
No way.
I didn't get to that part of it. No way.
Yeah, they brought her back.
Oh, man.
In fact, well, we have some audio from it. In the All in the Family episode, it was Woody Harrelson as Archie. It was Marissa Tomei as Edith. It was Ike Barinholtz as Meathead.
He was great.
And it was from Kimmy Schmidt. I'm having a brain fart. Nick.
Oh, and she played
Sally Kemper?
Yes.
She played the Sally Struthers character?
Yes, yeah.
Okay.
Oh, cool.
And then you had Lionel, who was, and I believe it was the very first episode of All in the Family that they did.
Was it?
No, word for word.
Wow. Well, yeah. So they stuck to the script. They bleeped the N-word. That's my understanding.
Oh, my God. They actually said the N-word?
Yeah.
Because that was said.
They were said constantly on the show.
Oh, my God.
And so let's play a little clip. What is this clip of, Steve?
So we have, starting from the top, it's Marissa Tomei and Woody Harrelson singing the All in the Family theme.
They did great.
Yeah.
They did really well. In front of a live audience, and it was live because there was a flub at one point.
Yeah.
Which was pretty funny.
Wide away, Glenrilla play
songs that made the hit parade.
Guys like us, we had it made.
Those were the days. And you knew who you were there.
Girls were girls and men were men.
Mister, we could use a man like Hoyman.
Didn't need no welfare state.
Everybody pulled his weight.
G.O. Roller, sour and great. Those were the days.
Marissa Tomei was adorable.
I love her.
Role. I know. I didn't know what I would think of her playing that character. But
and she was carrying on the tradition because, actually, the original Edith played Aunt May in the Spider-Man movies as well. So,
I didn't know that.
Jean Stapleton.
But it's interesting to watch that first episode. They dove right into those social themes, ma'am, right off the bat, between black and white, men and women.
Yeah.
And they went right at it, liberal and conservative. It was really interesting to catch the theme of that.
I used to love the show.
Yeah.
You'd never seen anything like it, and it was ABC was tiptoeing around it when it first came on, and then it was a huge hit, and it worked because it basically it took a mirror, Preston, and turned it around.
Yeah,
and that's what made it work. Yeah. It probably did more to help issues than anything, just by saying, here's what it is.
Yeah.
Just going back to that theme song, I got goosebumps listening to it. And Marissa Tomei, it takes a lot of talent to sing that well badly.
Yeah, it's, yeah.
You know,
off key.
Off key. I mean, that's not an easy thing to do. And she nailed it.
So we have an exchange between Archie, Woody Harrelson, and Jamie Foxx, who was Jefferson, as you said.
All right, here we go.
At long last, great Jefferson, who always reclined across my threshold, is into the house, all dooted up with a flower in his lapel. Is that one of them things they squirt in your eye?
No, it's real. I put a fresh one in every day.
Yeah, you don't blow money on a fresh flower every
no,
day.
No, I steal one every day from a blind flower girl.
He's joking. George, they don't know you here. Louise, tell them you're joking.
You don't have to tell them I'm joking. I will tell them when I am joking. I am joking.
And he was, the whole time, he's kind of like bobbing his head around, you know, like Sherman Helmsley would in that character. Yeah. And it was so great, man.
And you mentioned a flub that occurred.
Yeah.
And we have it here.
All right, here we go.
Ever since I was a little boy, I would always beg my mother for a little brother. But you know, we were broke. So all we could is live.
He turns to the side and goes, it's live to the audience.
Everyone sitting at home just think their TV just messed up. All we could afford was you.
He's kidding.
Louise, let a black man toast now. Let me toast in this White House.
And he had done to reset it after he flubbed. He walked around the room in George Jefferson style and then came back into the scene. It was well done, actually. Jennifer Hudson.
Yeah.
Sang the Jefferson theme. That gal can sing. I love her, too.
She's freaking amazing.
Yep. And she was dressed up in 70s garb and was in the apartment while singing, and it was really well done. They had backup singers and the whole thing. So here's a clip of that. It's so funny because as much as I love her voice and I wanted to hear all of it, I could not help but start singing along with it when I was watching it. Did we do that for crowd karaoke one year at Keenan's? Marissa, do you remember? Did we do the Jefferson's theme? Maybe not. There was some time where we had everybody singing it.
It's a classic. I mean, even if you're, I don't care what age you are, at some point you've heard that freaking song and heard it a number of times.
Yeah.
And then speaking of Florence Preston, it was Marla Gibbs who showed up at the door playing Florence, a role that she had played 50 years earlier.
And she was one of those standout roles.
Yeah, she
wasn't the main character, but she had so many scene-stealing moments.
Tons of laughs.
Back in the day. All right. For some reason. Oh, here we go. Let me turn that back up. Back it up, Casey.
All right.
Thank you. Here we go.
Miss Jefferson? I'm Florence Johnson. The agency sent me.
Oh, yes. Okay. Come in. This is my husband.
How do you do?
It's 10 o'clock on the dot.
Oh, I believe in being prompt, Mr. Jefferson. I always say I ain't got no right to waste time when other folks is paying for it.
Mm. See that? She's hired.
That's cool. It was interesting. I was not sure. I was on the fence of how the whole thing would play off, but it was fun. It was cool. It wasn't, you know, hilarious, but I did enjoy it. And Will Ferrell, and who played...
From Scandal. She's excellent. I forget her name.
Kerry Washington?
Yeah.
Kerry Washington. Uh-huh. You know, and I've forgotten the name of the couple that lived down the hall, the interracial couple.
Right, the mother was actually Lenny Kravitz's mother.
Yes.
Yeah. Roxy Roker?
I'm not sure.
I think that was her name. And the guy, I forget the guy's name.
But it was Tom and, was it the Willis? I don't remember. Anyway, they were great. It was so it was a lot of fun. So I don't know if they plan on doing anything else like that again sometime. But I do like these. I do like these live events.
This is what they're going to do, Press. They're going to do Happy Days, Laverne and Shirley.
Oh, you've heard about this?
No. I'm just because if this thing was a success, dude, they got A-list celebrities to do this.
Well, also, and the shows you're mentioning were done in front of live audiences.
Yes.
So it's not inconceivable that
they didn't get Ian Ziering to play R.G. Bunker. I mean, they had Woody Harrelson.
Right.
You know,
though Ian Ziering would have been a great choice.
Yes.
Yeah. And Brian Austin Green as Jefferson.
Breaking down barriers still after all these years.
Unbelievable. You have a white guy playing Jefferson.
Right, exactly. I like the live things. They're not always great, but it's kind of fun to watch and know that they're going without a net. And,
as far as gimmicks go, I'm down with it.
Yeah, exactly. All right, hey, somebody's on the phone.
What?
And we want to talk to them because we have a new coolest teacher school that's voting today, which is Archbishop Ryan in Northeast Philadelphia. But yesterday, we had asked for Cherry Hill West students to text in and tell us who the coolest teacher of the year was. We have them on the phone line. Yes, that's right. So please welcome and let's meet Mrs. Bridget Garrity Bantle.
Yay.
This morning. Hello. Is it Mrs. Bantle or Mrs. Garrity Bantle? How do you like to be referred to?
They call me Mrs. Garrity.
Mrs. Garrity still. Okay. But we'll call you Bridget. How about that?
Okay. That sounds great.
Hey, nice to meet you, by the way.
Nice to meet you, too.
You are a special education teacher. And how long have you been at Cherry Hill West?
I've been at Cherry Hill West for 21 years.
21? Well, there you go. There you go.
We had actually, Marissa found a video that I guess the high school video production team had done about you. I had a chance to watch about half of it before we started this morning. I guess that came out a year or two ago. And it would be safe to say that you are a beloved figure at that school. And I know you probably don't want to say, well, yes, I am. Of course I am. But you've got to feel the love from the student body, I would imagine.
I do. It's a great place to work.
That's cool. All right. So it says here you're a coach besides being a special education teacher. What do you coach?
Well, I was the soccer coach and the basketball coach, and I also helped with the lacrosse teams at West.
Wow.
But now I'm a soccer coach at Audubon High School because that's where my daughter plays.
Okay.
That's a ton of – and do you have five kids, I think?
I do have five kids.
Oh, my gosh.
The hell?
How do you do it?
How do you do that and still manage to collect Marvel action figures? Oh, wait, that's me.
No, how do you do it, Bridget? How do you attest to being able to have five kids and do all this other stuff?
Well, I have a lot of great people that I work with, and I have a great husband that helps out with everything, too.
Well, you can admit that he is not doing as much as he could be.
If you ask everybody else, he probably does a lot more than me.
Okay, all right.
What does he do?
He's a special education teacher at Audubon High School.
Wow.
And coaches as well.
You guys are awesome.
I tell you what, so I see the special education people at work firsthand because I have high school students, and when I go to visit the school, I'll see, these people that are part of their job is helping out students that need extra help.
Yeah.
It's amazing. It is. It's incredible. It is. It's not the way it used to be. It has progressed so well over the years. The attentiveness that certain students need. It's part of the reason why we started this whole coolest teacher of the year thing was because of my personal experiences and the personal touch that I've seen from teachers over the years. So it's just impressive. I think it's really cool. Have you always wanted to help out other people, Bridget?
Always. Yep. Yeah. Ever since I was younger.
Well, it's cool.
Well, obviously you're loved, and that's very so. Are you doing anything for the summer or no?
No, we both my husband and myself, we take off in the summer. And
if I were you, you and your husband should just sit in a room and do nothing.
Yeah,
for a month and a half.
You've earned it.
Yeah.
Yep.
She's down with that. All right.
Okay. All right. Well, listen, Bridget, we are going to give you the official Preston and Steve Coolest Teacher of the Year coffee mug, and we'll give you a $50 gift card to whatacrockmeals.com. Feed that family of five, and it's easy to do, so you'll be set up. So congratulations to you.
Great. Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
No problem.
Very cool.
Bridget, guys. This is Garrity at Cherry Hill West, and we now have Archbishop Ryan High School in Northeast Philadelphia. Rock. That is up for the task of voting for the coolest teacher of the year. So get on that. Get it to us as soon as you can. A text word teacher followed by the teacher's name to 39333. And we'll send a word back to you, and we'll, no, that's a secret text word. We do so many freaking text things that it's hard for me to keep track of.
It's a lot.
Yeah. Hey, I want to give away some movie passes. We're going to take a break, but I have Godzilla King of Monsters, and we can take another five callers. The movie screening is on Tuesday, 5 o'clock at the UA Riverview IMAX. It doesn't open until the 31st, so we'll get you in ahead of time. 215-263-WMMR is the number. I want to go ahead and take a break now, because when we return, not only the Bizarre File, well, depending timing-wise, but we're supposed to have head coach of the St. Louis Blues, Craig Berube, who's former head coach of the Philadelphia Flyers and a former player of the Flyers as well.
Yes.
On their way to the Stanley Cup Championship. It's cool. Another guy who's, you know, spent time here in Philly that's going to be basking in the glory, hopefully.
Yeah, and in a way, it's like the Flyers are in this.
It's kind of like it. Yeah. You know, with the Jacks, the, uh-huh, the bar and everything.
In a way.
Uh-huh. Like I said, we'll take it any way we can get it. We'll be back in just a moment. You stay with us now. You hear?
Our next MM Archive session features Duff McKagan and Shooter Jennings visiting the station prior to their TLA concert on Thursday, May 30th. It's another in our series of our close encounters of the rock kind, hosted by Pierre Robert. If you'd like to attend, listen to Pierre's show to win an invitation to join us for the MM Archive session with Duff McKagan and Shooter Jennings from your up-close and personal station, 93.3 WMMR. Everything that rocks.
Let's do the Bizarre File and then have a guest on the show.
Now, Bizarre. WMMR presents Bizarre. Kristen and Steve's Bizarre File.
All right, we will begin in Pittsburgh. University of Pittsburgh police believe a 28-year-old woman released bear spray inside a University of Pittsburgh building on Monday, sickening six people.
That's sick.
Sick.
That's potent stuff.
Yeah, Mary C. Seigert was charged with risking catastrophe and simple assault. Police believe that...
Smells like victory.
...that she went into the Eureka building Monday and released one can of bear spray. Witnesses said Ms. Seigert came into the building and asked several questions about the technology center before abruptly leaving and running down the street to catch a bus. Moments after she left, those inside the Eureka building began experiencing symptoms of being exposed to pepper spray, including difficulty breathing. The building was evacuated. Six people received treatment at the scene, and officers used surveillance video and canvassing to track down Ms. Seigert. They found her walking. She was carrying 2 8-ounce cans of Grizzly Tough Bear Spray Counter Assault.
Oh, she went big.
One spent can was hidden in a ripped seam of her jacket, while the other was still in its original packaging in her backpack. She told police that she usually carried pepper spray, but said it sometimes goes off unintentionally.
Absolutely. When you need to discharge it that way. When it comes out, bear spray, doesn't it come out in like a stream, like a straight stream?
Yeah.
Yeah, because you want to target the bear.
Almost like silly string.
It goes pretty far. Oh, really?
Well, I mean,
I've always seen it like a wasp spray when you're hitting a nest, that like a real concentrated stream.
Okay.
I didn't realize, though, that you could pick the bear you wanted to repel, because this was for a grizzly bear. Do they have them for panda?
No, it's not grizzly bear. It's grizzly tough.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Bear spray. So it's
Yes, I have a Kodiak bear problem, and I see you're out of Kodiak bear repellent.
Officers, however, noted that she did not have any bear spray on her clothing or backpack. She had said she may have bumped it, but she was charged with 6 counts of simple assault in that. A convicted felon accidentally shot himself in the genitals at an apartment. And his problems didn't stop there. This guy was having a bad day. Cameron Jeffrey Wilson had a pistol tucked into his front pocket. When the gun discharged, sending a bullet through his testicles and then into his thigh. But instead of heading directly to the hospital, Wilson instructed his girlfriend to first drive to Lincoln Park, where he gave the pistol to a friend. A 13-time convicted felon.
Oh, there you go.
It is illegal for Wilson to possess a firearm. As doctors...
Can we take a little side trip here?
As doctors and nurses performed surgery at Central Washington Hospital, A balloon containing marijuana slipped out of his anus.
Oh, my God.
I'm just having a heck of a day. First, I shot myself in the balls, and now a pot has slipped out of my butt.
Sheriff's detectives were notified that Wilson had suffered a gunshot wound and then responded to the hospital. They searched the car and found a bag of methamphetamine inside a pair of blood-stained jeans that he'd taken off before entering the hospital.
And my inspection sticker's overdue.
Detectives declined to arrest Wilson at the hospital and instead issued an arrest warrant on suspicion of second-degree felon in possession of a firearm and unlawful possession of meth. Wilson turned himself in, and during a strip search there, another balloon of marijuana slipped out of his butt.
Wow. Wow.
This dude needs to find a new stash place because he apparently can't keep it in there.
It's just not good enough.
He was arrested and then charged with possession of a controlled substance in a correctional facility.
Well, apparently now he has a new hole in his testicles, so he may want to use that.
Yeah, he could stash it there.
Yeah.
The people in a town in northern India took to the streets to demand action after a monkey went on a rampage through the town, attacking and biting residents in a 9-day reign of terror. One victim, a 60-year-old man, later succumbed to his injuries and died.
Yeah, the monkey killed someone.
The fact no anti-rabies treatments are available at the local hospital has further angered the townspeople.
They have issues with these monkeys all the time.
Yeah, the protesters blocked traffic, causing major disruption, which stirred police in action. They also laid the deceased man's body in the street, I guess, to help protest.
We'll keep going crazy until we get the right to vote.
The monkeys aren't having it.
No, they're not having it.
Police promised the townsfolks immediate action, which resulted in the lifting of a blockade. Rabies medication was rushed to the area, and 3-hour search by forest rangers resulted in the capture of a monkey that is thought to be the killer.
So, whatever you think about your life, just celebrate the fact that you don't have to deal with daily monkey attacks.
This incident comes just a week after another Indian monkey took a bank worker hostage
in
a bizarre video.
What?
The incident happened at the Axis Bank in Nirman, Bihar. The customers watched.
Let her go and we'll give you bananas.
A local said the customers watched this incident with amusement and they laughed at the action of the monkey.
Was the monkey, did the monkey have the teller and a half Nelson?
No, but the story ends with this line. It says he also tried to hump the worker's head a few times before leaving.
That's just adding insult to injury.
Rude.
That is rude.
Man.
You know, their bones are so dense. If you recall, there was two years ago, that was a monkey on a high power wire.
And Do I ever.
Way, way, way up there, and they were trying to get him down. He ended up jumping. This thing would have killed any human.
Yeah.
And he jumped off of this thing, landed, did a tumble, and then took off.
Yeah. Drink a lot of milk.
Yeah.
All right, and then one last story, and we have to get to our guest. Dog owner Rosie Brown from California recently hired Casey Bringle to walk and sit her dogs via the app called Wag. A doggy cam in the kitchen, however, revealed that Bringle and a strange man in Brown's bedroom were together and also that Bringle's parents had visited the apartment. Footage also shows Bringle sitting on their couch naked and yelling at the dogs.
So not only was she not watching the dogs, she was having sex with her boyfriend.
Yeah. Bringle told a reporter, though, that nothing happened in the bedroom.
Oh.
And she was naked on the couch simply because she got hot.
Don't you think it's implied if ever someone hires you to do any sort of sitting at their home, they want you to walk around naked and sit on their furniture?
Of course. But no, Wag has suspended Bringle as well as refunded Brown, and they offered to pay it for any cleaning services and a locksmith as well to take care of all that. And there you go. That is what I have in the bizarre file for you this morning. All right. I can't believe we got this guest on the line. Mm-hmm. He is headed to the Stanley Cup Championship Series, which I believe is to start on Monday.
Starts on Memorial Day, on Monday, yeah.
And he's got this song to thank. Not really. I mean, it's definitely been a part of the St. Louis Blues' success. And we had Mikey on yesterday from Jax NYB that got this whole Gloria thing started. And by the way, of course, you guys know I'm originally from St. Louis.
Yes.
I got, I don't know how many texts yesterday saying, dude, there's this bar in Philly. Hold on. Yeah. You heard about it. I'm like, I know. Yeah, we had the guys on and so on and so forth. But anyhow, we have Philadelphia ties not only there, but also in the head coach of the St. Louis Blues, former coach of the Flyers and player for the Flyers. Ladies and gentlemen, Mr. Craig Berube is on the show this morning. Hey, coach, how you doing?
Good. How are you guys doing? Thanks for having me on.
Of course, man. Well, congratulations, first and foremost. It's got to feel amazing, right?
Yeah, it's great. I mean, you know, from it's, you know, it's been a long year, and you know, I think our guys, you know, they've been really dialed in for quite some time now, and then you get to this, you know, it's still not over yet. You know, still some work to do, but we're definitely excited and guys are doing well.
Talk about a season that represents the ultimate dichotomy. You know, things are not looking good at the beginning, and then you just go off on this tear. And, you know, at what point did everyone start to look at each other and go, are we really doing this? Because it just sort of, you know, it just, you went from zero to 60.
Yeah, it took a little while. But, I mean, obviously, I think the new faces we got in our team and, you know, just it took some time to get that all to gel together. And I think once that happened and, you know, we figured everything out and got people in their places and where they fit in and their roles and we started to really get going as a team, and obviously Binnington coming in with the goaltending.
Yeah,
you know, now we started to feel real good, and we started to really, you know, look like a real good team. And, you know, you're just wondering if it was too late, you know, because you had to really win a lot of games.
Yeah.
The league is so tough. Like,
yeah.
There's so many good teams. It's hard, you know, and you got to catch so many teams. But we just went on that roll, and I think we won 11 in a row, and Once you win 11 in a row and you lose one, then you wonder, well, is that it? Are we gonna,
yeah.
You know, what are we gonna do now? But you know, we ended up just kept rolling, like we just kept winning, and guys did a great job.
No question, you get a hot goaltender, and you're gonna have a good shot at doing well. But you got to score goals too. So that was his performance. Did it kind of light a fire under the guys, under the skaters out there as well, and kind of motivate them?
It gives a confidence for sure
in
your play, and the guys obviously fed off of his performing the way he was and confidence. And we got a lot of good players that can score. And I think what we did too is everybody was used and everybody produced and helped. It wasn't just two lines and a couple defensemen. Everybody was involved. Everybody was used, and that's still going on. That's how we do things. And we're getting production from everybody, which is really important.
I don't know if you've answered this question a million times, but it's probably one of the first times you've asked it and been asked it and answered in a Philadelphia market. The hand pass that happened in overtime in the series against the Sharks should have stopped the game. It shouldn't have been a game-winning goal for them. It ended up happening. They didn't overturn the call. How did you guys use that moment to rally, to not play poorly afterwards, to win three games in a row? What was that like in the locker room after really a blown call by the officials?
Yeah, you know, we were more upset about letting them back in that game. We were clearly in control in that game, and they ended up tying it late. So, I mean, it went into overtime, and then we lose in a hand pass. So, for me, we lost that game before that, and I think our players felt the same thing. And we went in the locker room, we just talked for a minute about, listen, we don't need to bring it up. We don't need to talk about it, really. We just need to let it go and get ready for game four. And I think the players did that. They really did. And, you know, that was just our conversation with those guys. And, you know, we didn't say anything really to the media about it or anything. We just let it go. And, you know, I think that the guys really believed that we were going to win this series and we're the better team.
Yeah. Hey, and Craig, in looking at your bio, I don't think I've seen the words interim head coach come up more. which is kind of interesting, you know. Hey, we're gonna try you out, you know. Let's just see how you do. So, having been in that position a few times, and now headed to the Stanley Cup, does it? Do you feel a little vindicated?
Yeah, I mean, I'm really happy for the team, and you know, just all of it, the organization, the fan base here, and everything. It's they got a real good fan base here. And, you know, the organization is awesome. So, and the players, you know, for me, I just feel real happy for them, the situation that they're in now, chance to win the cup and to play for it. So, you know, I'm just happy for all those guys. And obviously myself too, like I love coaching these guys. And so far it's been a real good season and a lot of fun, and just looking forward to, you know, playing for the cup in the finals here.
I wish it was for here. That'd be great. But I did grow up in St. Louis, so I have local ties, and I've always been a St. Louis Blues fan, first and foremost. Well, I know Flyers fans are going to hate hearing that.
No, it's all right.
But one of my good friends, Chet, texted me, and he wanted me to let you know that he cried the other night. So it does affect the fan base there, and you've made a huge impact. And he wanted me to let you know that there's two reasons that they're in the cup: Bennington and because of you. So I know you've been embraced by that fan base now, and that's got to feel great as well.
Oh, it does for sure. And they have embraced me, and it feels great. And I like it. It's a great place here, like I said. I love, the organization and working here. And like I said, the fan base is remarkable, and they've been behind us all year. And it's pretty cool to see, how happy the city is and the people and everything. And
yeah,
it's pretty cool to see.
And my mom's name is Gloria, by the way.
There you go. So you owe Preston's mother.
Somewhat responsible. What do you think of that whole sensation, the music, the song and all this?
Well, it's pretty cool how it came up. And I didn't really know. Quite some time how it all became happening. It was pretty funny. It's from Philadelphia and stuff like that. But
So you're like, these boys are here listening to this stupid song again in the locker room. It's all about.
I'm starting to like it a little bit.
Listen, it could have been worse. It could have been the thong song by Cisco. So he ended up winning. So with the association with, the connections to the Flyers here, would it be safe to say that if you do, in fact, win the Stanley Cup, that in essence, the Flyers have won the Stanley Cup?
He's just laughing.
He's not buying that, is
well,
he? No.
I find it funny that everybody sort of glosses over the fact that these guys were partying at a bar in Philadelphia till the wee hours of the morning on essentially a game night. And, that part of it never comes up. So maybe that's
it
why
it works.
Maybe that's why you didn't hear about it right away, Coach.
They were in by curfew, guys.
Okay. Well, listen, you may need to change your training and have an open bar at the skate around.
Coach, I want to know if you're a superstitious hockey person.
Well, just routine more than superstitious. I wouldn't say I'm a superstitious guy.
Okay.
That way. I just, I got routines and I follow them. And, I like my routine.
What happened with the Western Conference trophy when you guys when you won the other night? Do people touch it? Did they not touch it? How did the team handle that?
They didn't touch it.
Okay.
No.
Is it okay to ask about the Stanley Cup now, or do I have to wait for a week or two to ask? Because the reason I'm bringing it up is, if you win the Stanley Cup, will you bring it into our studios?
Ooh.
I'd have to see. I don't know how that all works.
Okay.
We still got, like I said, we got a lot of work to do yet. We're playing a good team, obviously, and it'll be a tough go.
Yeah, the Stanley Cup playoffs are like no other postseason that I can think of. And so, you have a team like the Tampa Bay Lightning, who basically they tied a record for most amount of games won in
right.
a season, and had 127 points at the end of the regular season. And then got swept in the first round, and that is crazy. And then you have a team like the Blues, who were, the last place team in January, and obviously you want to be hot towards the end of the season. So mm-hmm. Anything can happen right about now.
Well, the league's tight. It's a lot of parity. Like I said, a team like Tampa Bay, and then they get beat in the first round four straight. It just happens.
Yeah.
Every team is so competitive and good players. You don't get off to a good start a lot of times, teams at the beginning of the year, and you're battling all year then to catch up because you have to, because that's just the way it is.
Yeah.
And you're going into the playoffs and you've been battling for quite some time, so you're really used to the battle and what's needed to win. And win in kind of a playoff atmosphere. We were playing playoff atmosphere for, a month and a half straight.
Well, it's serving you well.
Well, yeah.
Craig, what's it like at this point, because it's so late into the season, which is a great thing, but physically, and from being a player, you're being held together by duct tape and shoestrings. I mean, hockey players play so hard that it's just, you've got to be, even though you're mentally and physically, or mentally fired up for it, physically can be a bit rough, right?
Well, it can be for sure. You know, we got some days here to rest up before we get going again, which is good. Mm-hmm. But, you know, you're fired up all the time. I mean, you just battle through the physical part of that stuff. You know, mentally, I think, you know, you're tuned in, obviously, you know, and understand the situation, so you fight through it. But the physical part, yeah, there's, you know, injuries are all obviously a part of it. And everybody's pretty banged up this time of year, but they just battle through it.
All right.
They do.
Hey, have you had Emo's Pizza yet out there yet?
Yeah, it's not as good as Philly's Pizza.
Oh!
That's not the answer he wanted.
It's an acquired taste.
Yeah. You had to grow up in it. It's awesome.
It's like flatbread.
Yeah, it is exactly right.
It's thin and crispy and really, really creamy. But anyway, but you are off season. You still live here, right, Craig?
Yeah, okay, cool.
You're out in Bucks County, right?
Yep, I am.
And what's your address? What's your exact
home address?
Yeah, I like, you know, I've always liked that area of Philadelphia, and I've a lot of ties there. I've obviously played there and coached there and been there for a number of years.
Well, they call it Little St. Louis.
It's a great city.
Yeah, no, it's awesome.
Well, listen, we're happy for you. We're excited that there is this Philadelphia connection to a team that is in the show, and we'll see how it goes.
Yes.
I got a question for you guys. I want to know when you're booking Elvis.
Booking Elvis?
Oh, Derek's son.
Oh, my God.
Yes.
Derek Settlemyer. The trainer of the Flyers. Great. His kid. Have you seen those videos of him?
Oh, yeah. He sends it to me, Derek, and stuff.
That's my great. God. He's
poised to be a rock star.
Yeah, absolutely.
He's ready.
Yeah, he's 4 years old.
But we'll get him in here soon. We'll have to get him up for a performance for sure.
And Derek says that your nickname for some reason is Big Boy. Everybody here knows you as Chief, but Derek calls you Big Boy.
He's laughing.
he likes to call me that.
Yeah. Okay.
I'm sure it's genital based.
Oh, my God.
Well, we'll let that remain a mystery.
Good luck, Coach.
Good luck in the finals, Coach.
Thanks,
we wish you the best. All right, Craig Berube. Guys.
Yeah.
There it is.
This song, and by the way, you can hate it all you want, but once you hear it, it is stuck
yesterday
in your mind.
After we spoke to Mikey down there at Jack's, and we played this when we had him on, at any given time, you'd hear somebody going,
and you only know the one lyric, at least I do, which is Gloria.
And then, calling Gloria.
All right, well, what part does it... there's a part of the song where it says, and talking Preston Elliott.
Oh, it does?
No, well, it sounds like Elliott. Like do they say Elliott? Is Elliott part of the lyrics?
I don't know.
Was it Alias?
Let's go with it's yes. Probably Alias.
I think it's your
or
Alias.
Or Elliot Ness.
Maybe. A throwback to the G-Man who took down Al Capone.
Al Capone.
Yes.
The song seems to be all about the Chicago mob scene. Yeah, it's a song about prohibition.
I think they got the alias Gloria. Okay.
All right, so you thought that was Preston Elliott.
No. Gloria.
All right, that's that. We got to take a break because we have more guests who are going to be on the program this morning. Scott is stopping by. Toure is going to be on a program, as well as Lance Riddick, who stars in John Wick Chapter 3. So a lot to get to. Don't forget, tomorrow morning, live broadcast. Keenan's Irish Pub, official opening of the Jersey Shore. And hopefully you can join us. If not in person, we'll be on the radio. You know where to find us. We'll be right back.
Stream WMMR anywhere you have an internet connection. Check out the mobile app or go to WMMR.com. You'll figure it out from there.
Say goodbye to juggling paper coupons and missing out on the best deals. Download the Acme mobile app today to have your own personal grocery guru right in your pocket. Use it to plan your shopping list like a pro. Get personalized deals on the products you buy most and choose your shopping style. Whether it's in-store, delivery, or drive-up, where an experienced Acme associate will carefully select, bag your order, even pick up your prescriptions from the pharmacy and bring it all right to your car. Acme. Fresh foods, local flavors.
Back with more of the Preston and Steve Show podcast.
Our next guest in the studio's family has been a part of the Philadelphia gentry for quite a long time. And there is a new book that is out, and it is called The Beneficiary, Fortune, Misfortune, and the Story of My Father. It's available everywhere now. Please welcome to our studio, Miss Jannie Scott.
Yes.
Great to be here.
Wonderful to see you, Janie. Thanks for coming in this morning. Nick, when did this first come on your radar? Because you booked Janie to be here today.
So I saw the book came out a month or two ago, and I was interested in it because of the Philadelphia connections. And then accidentally and completely coincidentally, I ended up wandering around the grounds where she grew up. And that's probably illegal, and so I apologize. But this estate outside of Radnor, Pennsylvania is called Ardrossan, and it's this amazing, incredible piece of land. And then I started putting the dots together and realized the connection to the movie The Philadelphia Story, which came out in 1940. And that basically, Jenny, was the story of your grandmother, right?
Well, that's what was often said. The play was written by Philip Barry, who was a friend of my grandfather's. He came to the place. This was, at the time, was an 800-acre estate, half hour outside of the fourth largest city in the country. And he wrote the play and dedicated it to my grandparents. And in the decades after that, it came to be said that my grandmother was the model for Tracy Lord, the spoiled mainline heiress who gets her comeuppance in the play and then the movie. Whether it was actually based on her is not entirely clear. She developed a certain celebrity around here for that. And when she died, her obituary was stripped across the top of the front page of the Philadelphia Inquirer. So it may have, there were characters. Some qualities in that character like her, but it was probably based more on Katharine Hepburn.
And when she passed away, it was massive headline news, especially in Philadelphia. I mean, she was a fixture in this city and deserved the recognition that she got at her passing.
Yes, she was an extremely charismatic person with a racy sense of humor, an amazing horsewoman. She was said to have once bought a horse for a tin of caviar and a dirty joke every week for a year.
So doing some research on her, and apparently she would relay these stories of hanging with people like Josephine Baker and the Duke of Windsor and Winston Churchill, and sort of cast off these mentions of these the Store Club, these incredibly historical locations and people. And I mean, the repository of, I hope many of these stories were chronicled, because it just sounds like there's 9 books in what she could have told just casually at a cocktail party.
It's true. She wasn't a name dropper, but she loved telling funny stories. And the funny stories often involved making fun of herself, which I thought was a particularly admirable quality.
Self-deprecation, and we've said it on the show many times, that is the most disarming and, I think, wonderful attribute for someone to have.
I couldn't agree more.
Yeah.
So this was your paternal grandmother?
Exactly.
So your father's mother.
That's right.
But the book focuses on your dad and your relationship with him?
Well, I started out just interested in writing about the place that Nick described, this extraordinary estate that was built in the early 20th century, at a time when there were a lot of such places on the main line. This one survived from one gilded age to the next, all through the 20th century and basically intact to the cusp of the 21st century.
No small feat.
Yeah. No, not at all. And some of it had to do with my grandmother, actually, yeah. Just the whole reputation that she developed. But I wanted to write about that place and the inception of it because I wanted to understand it, having grown up there. But increasingly, the story became more and more about my father.
And it changed in tone, but it's pronounced Ardrossan?
Ardrossan.
Right. I have to confess, I'm a big fan of F. Scott Fitzgerald and the story of the wealthy and vast wealth and a wealth of this level. But there was a description of the creation of the estate. And I guess to block the view of another house that was going up, basically a forest was built.
Was the plan.
Can you describe exactly? And I was reading a quote that actually caught my eye. It said, "It's just what God would have done if he had the money."
That was a line about what Moss Hart did on his place. But yes, very similar. I mean, I went through all the papers having to do with the construction of this place, which happened to be preserved in this house. No one had really been looking at them. They just kind of dumped there and left. And all the bills showed an amazing thing to me. This landscape that I had always imagined as a child was completely natural and been there since time immemorial.
No.
Had been created by the ego and ambition and imagination of my great-grandfather, Robert Leeming Montgomery. And yes, he transformed the landscape. He built this forest when he was offended by the sight of a house going up within his view.
Built a forest!
That was the plan, yes.
There's a list of the amount of plants and the wide variety of plants. So my wife and I are you know, we're getting a little sod and a couple plants at the house. this cost more, I'm sure.
Yeah, but it's like, you know, 1,000 rhododendron arriving on Tuesday.
I mean, but full trees coming in. You know, so how long a process was that? Because I would have assumed naturally that was the natural forest that was there, but not so.
Precisely. That's exactly how I felt. I don't know how long the process was. I mean, I think it went on over about a 40-year period. He acquired the original piece of land in about 1911, built this 50-room house, which has been, you know, compared to the American Downton Abbey, on this original plot, then annexed all sorts of farms around him, acquiring ultimately, as I said, 800 acres spanning four unincorporated communities.
Wow.
With, you know, old stone farmhouses in which he had stalled the whole many of the next generation. They then put their children in there and even some of their children's children.
So it was not a, for lack of a better term, a family compound, you know, take Hyannisport and times a thousand.
Multiply.
Yeah.
Yes, exactly.
It's a staggering thing. You're a longtime journalist and award-winning journalist and, you know, New York Times writer for many years. You have the abilities to obviously do investigative journalism and go through archives and so on and so forth. And as you're going through this and as you're assembling this story, which you say started with the estate and then moved on to your family, you were left with some decisions about how, as things started to reveal themselves to you, where you took the story, because it's your family and you have, of course, allegiance to family members and what you would reveal and what you wouldn't. How did you hash that out?
Well, yes, it's true. The deeper I got into the story, the more complicated it became. Some people would say the darker it became. At that point, you're, you know, years into your work and you've got to make a decision. Do I want to risk offending and hurting my family? Do I want to sanitize this, which doesn't feel what I would do as a journalist?
Right.
Or do I just immerse myself more deeply and try to do justice to the sort of human complexity of the story, which, of course, is the route I chose? I definitely left some things out, but I feel it's not a propaganda tract. It's a story about human complication, and it touches on all sorts of things: suicide and addiction.
Yeah,
and yet in the overall, I would say there's many very appealing, funny aspects to the book. It's full of humor because the family was very funny in a lot of ways. So I find it, you know, I did have to make some tough decisions, and I spent a lot of time awake at night worrying about the impact of what I was about to do.
No doubt.
But
yeah.
I'm hoping that so far my family seems to have received it quite well.
I haven't finished reading the book yet, but it's a remarkable story that for the amount of wealth and the amount of land and the history within the main line of Philadelphia, which is, you know, one of the great wealth centers of our country, how relatable the stories of your family are to anyone. And you talk a little bit about your father's relationship with your mother. They got divorced later in life, and that monogamy was just sort of something that wasn't adhered to. Did you get to know your father better through these letters? And if so, did you grow to have a distaste for his actions in life?
No. I was fascinated by my father from a very young age and adored him. And what happened in the course of this book process was he had offered me, as when I was in my 20s, his diaries when he died. And because I was so interested in him, I was absolutely thrilled, but I was stunned, and I said, "Well, why me?" And he said, "You're the writer." And that was the end of the conversation, and we never discussed it again because I was afraid he would withdraw the offer if I brought it up. So I did finally find the diaries. Actually, I was in the middle of the third chapter of the book. I had tried to find them before and hadn't.
After his passing.
Exactly. And it was a remarkable discovery. They were locked in a wooden chest in the a far corner of the house that he had moved out of 20 years earlier.
Wow!
With the padlock set to one digit off the phone number, which of course was the combination we always used. So it wasn't very difficult to figure out how to get in. And when I opened it, there were 40 years worth of diaries in identical black three ring binders, in my opinion, waiting to be discovered. So yes, I got to know him very differently. Not It wasn't full of shocking surprises, but it explained so much about the things that I had found mysterious. So I actually ended up at the end of this process with a lot more empathy for my father because I saw how much he had wrestled with things that he hadn't conceded to us, things like his alcoholism.
Depression.
Yeah, depression, exactly.
If you're just tuning in, Janie Scott is here. Her book is called The Beneficiary. And I was curious, you know, because a lot of us, when it comes to vast wealth and families that have a long history with that, a lot of what we get from it, we see in movies or books and so on. And, for example, like Game of Thrones or Crazy Rich Asians, these are, you know, these both center around people that have wealth and power.
Great Poupon commercials.
Great Poupon commercials, of course. One of the main themes is making sure that the line is carried on, the family line, that the all the resources and all the wealth is handled properly. And a lot of pressure that's put on the younger end to make sure that they do indeed fall into the right group of people, end up with the person of a proper stature to carry that on. And I'm sure that your family was filled with that type of thing. Were these the pressures? I mean, by the time it's gotten to generations now, I think things have changed a little bit, except for Crazy Rich Asians, which is a current film. But is there any touched on in the book about that, or did your father face those kind of pressures?
Absolutely. In my father's generation, which was the third generation, there was an expectation that you would live on that place, and, you know, along with that came a lot of benefits. You might get a job in a law firm, as my father did, that had been started by his great uncle. You might get a job in the stock brokerage that had been started by his grandfather and father. It wasn't, you know, full employment for everyone, but it was a pretty nice life. And you had a house, which under the terms of the family would be your rent, which was tiny, would be paid by the previous generation. So there were a lot of incentives, and there was a feeling that if the family would stay on the place, it would help the place remain intact, which it did, and it would also help the family remain intact. By my generation, I think that was dissipating, and very few of us ended up living there. And my father never put pressure on us. But the thing I discovered from his diaries was that he saw in the 20s, in his 20s, when he had moved there right after law school, actually moved there right after college, gone to the law school that his family had gone to and lived in a house on the place and married just the right woman, he saw that he had made all these decisions that were not necessarily making him happy.
Ah.
Okay. By the way, I want to point out the place is the family nickname for the estate.
That's right. Correct? Yes, using the most mundane term possible. Right?
I love that, though. But yeah, that's in true to what reading about your father is that he had issues of a perception of self, and he was not a braggart, or he was not, you know, he tried to diminute himself a lot. Correct?
Yes, often in humorous ways.
Yeah.
Getting back to the notion of self-deprecating humor, but he actually felt those things, and that was revealed in the diaries. This extreme sensitivity, which he had to cover with the demeanor of an extremely jovial, gregarious public person who he was in Philadelphia. He made enormous contributions in the city by living this kind of public life, at the same time wrestling with these interior demons that
It's such a classic thing. It's such a classic part of our perception of well, they have everything. How can they be sad? And that's part of it. Now you have the two families, which are the Montgomerys and the Scotts, correct?
That's right.
Montgomerys were bankers.
Yep.
And the Scotts came from the railroad
that's
side.
Right.
And at one point, the railroad company was the largest. The patriarch was the mogul of the family. I'm sorry, I'm having a brain fart, but controlled that part of the family. It was the largest business in the country for a while, was it not?
I think it was the most profitable corporation in North America.
It's staggering.
In the late 19th century, and the largest freight carrier in the world.
In the world at that time. So, you know, you think about in relation to today, and again, you know, those, for example, box office receipts, they'll adjust them to the time period or whatever. Think about that kind of power and that kind of wealth. Even with all that you've been experiencing throughout your life, that still has to blow you away as well.
Yeah, well, one of the things I began thinking about in working on this is the way money is made today. And it's not all that different from the way it was made by my great-grandfather, certainly in finance and also in, you know, newer industries now like social media,
right,
or internet-based industries. People are making gobs of money and they're doing very similar things to what my great-grandparents did. Building huge houses, hiring the kind of go-to architect to the plutocrats of the day, you know, buying other houses elsewhere, creating family compounds and attempting, as Preston said, to sort of project their influence over subsequent generations. So I was very struck by the fact that these decisions that influenced my father's life, decisions made by previous generations, similar kinds of decisions are being made now for people who are not yet born.
Yeah, yeah. It's fascinating.
There were these normal aspects of your life, or normal to other people, where your father would take SEPTA into the city every day for work, right?
Mm-hmm.
And what was it like growing up at a place like Ardrossan, you know, this 800-acre estate? For you, it must have just been childhood.
Yeah, I spent the first 14 years of my life there, and then we moved to England. It was my father's job. It was, you know, idyllic. We had this vast area in which we could roam utterly freely. I confess we had horses, and there were tennis courts, and there was this amazing swimming pool in the woods. And, of course, being children, we didn't understand quite how bizarre the whole thing was. We were surrounded by a wonderful cast of characters, not just my charismatic grandmother and her wannabe playwright husband, and but also all the people who worked on the place. You know, lots of Irish families who had come as immigrants and were busy really quickly moving up the socioeconomic scale. You know, families that now I see in the research on the book, they came as laborers. The next generation went to college. The third generation has been through professional school and they're working in the professions. So it was a pretty charmed existence.
And just a regular dairy farm in a lot of respects, too. I mean, you had these cows that towards the end of the farm's life, it was not making any money. In fact, it was costing money to operate it as a dairy farm. But in some respects, that was the trade, and that was the work that people were doing at this estate.
That was the work that the professional farmers, right, were doing, and my grandmother was sort of managing it. But yes, you're right. By the end, she was spending $3 for every gallon, for every dollar's worth of milk that she could sell.
Well, it was, you just have to have cattle. That's the thing. You had to have cows. That was part of the deal. So
it's funny, these large estates, we joke about, you know, driving by and yelling out the window, "What do you do? Yeah. How do you get this huge place?" What is the status of the estate now? Is it a private home, or is it still in your family?
Well, it's in the process of being dismantled. There's been a number of sales since the late 20th century. In the late 90s, they sold off some land. They sold off some more in the early 2000s. And now the last 300 acres or so are being broken up and developed with large houses, developed somewhat sensitively with quite a lot of open space. And 80 acres have been sold to the township as conservation land, parkland. So what will remain is the house and the 15 acres around it. And what is the future of the house? That's completely up in the air.
Okay.
I wanted to.
So who owns? Does the family still own it?
Everything was put in trusts by my great grandparents.
Okay.
And some of those trusts have now ceased. And so the house earlier, I think this year, or came out of the trust and is now owned by a nonprofit that basically represents the family until we figure out what to do with it.
I wanted to ask you, as a journalist and working for the Times and the work that you do, and I think there's sort of a set of skills that old school journalists possess that and I see a lot of people wondering if those still flourish within the newer journalists. And you mentioned social media and money to be made there. And there's been a question as to whether or not that's influenced journalism for the worst, I should say. And how do you feel? Because I think the kind of work that you did and the kind of work you did in researching this is just, you know, pounding the pavement and pulling out archives and doing that stuff and being curious. And it seems that curiosity is not as strong as it used to be or is with journalists of your caliber. Is that accurate, or am I just misreading?
It's very hard to generalize about journalism. I think you're right that market forces have preempted rank curiosity.
Yeah.
You know, I was fortunate enough to be a journalist in a time when you could follow your curiosity pretty much anywhere and you could get your stories published. That's a lot harder to do now, and the pressures are greater. I think papers like news organizations like the Washington Post and the New York Times and the Wall Street Journal are still doing extraordinary journalism, very much of the sort that I did.
Right.
But they're also having to do other things that feed the beast. And I think that the decimation of more regional papers is a terrifying thing for democracy.
Yeah, yeah, because it's everyone's got to pay the bills,
yeah,
and that's part of the
exactly.
process. So, the book is fascinating.
Yeah, it is, and it's a fascinating look into the our aristocracy in this area,
there's so much that this family over generations have brought to this area. It's you'll be fascinated to read.
By the way, Janie, there's a caller on the line. Valerie says, will there be a book signing or anything like that? Her grandmother worked on the estate, and I'm sure there's a lot of people that had jobs in this area, or their family did, who are curious to read the book. But do you have any signings or anything like that coming
up? Yeah, I have done a few, and if you look on my website, which is, sorry for promoting myself
here,
Janie@JannieScott.com, and that's spelled without an E, JANNY@JannieScott.com. If you look under the events area, you'll see that there are quite a few things coming up in this area, so you could come to any of those.
Okay, wonderful. It's a great peek. I've not read it yet, but I've read excerpts from it, but a great peek into, like I said, that lifestyle here and the relationship with your father and finding out these things out about him through his diaries is really fascinating.
It is.
It's cool.
Yeah.
Well, Janie, great to meet you. Thanks
great
so much for coming
you,
by.
Preston. Thank you, Steve.
We appreciate it. Janie Scott, guys.
Yeah.
The Beneficiary is the name of the book, and it's available now. We'll be back in just a moment. Stay with us. Hey, gang, we need your blood. It's time to roll up your sleeve for the I Bleed for Preston and Steve Blood Drive, Saturday, June 15th.
Last year was the second largest blood drive in the nation, and with your help, it'll be number one this year.
So we're headed to the Greater Philadelphia Expo Center in Oaks for this year's drive with kids' activities from Aim High Studio and Painter Treasure Ceramics, plus Rita's Water Ice and Alex's Lemonade Stand.
The Red Cross is always in need, especially leading into the summer months, so make an appointment now at WMMR.com.
All donors get the newest Preston and Steve t-shirt and this year's pint glass from Window Nation.
Hundreds of donors will be randomly selected for free tickets to one of these concerts at the BB&T Pavilion, the Smashing Pumpkins and Noel Gallagher on August 8th,
or Alice Cooper and Hailstorm on August 16th. Tickets for these shows are on sale now at Ticketmaster.com.
Our 14th annual I Bleed for Preston and Steve Blood Drive
from the American Red Cross Penn Jersey Blood Services Region
and 93.3 WMMR, putting Philly first.
Marissa wanted me to point this out. A couple things on Preston Steve.com for you to check out. We have our conversation with Mike Montecalvo, who's the co-founder of Jax NYBD, the bar that is tied in with the St. Louis Blues thing. He was so great.
Love him.
It's so much fun.
The exact kind of guy you want to hang out with. And it's a private mummer's bar, right?
Yes, but
they're
the
opening
games,
up. Yeah, yeah.
They're opening it up. And also we have the Q&A with Shay, our cover girl, and Miss May from the 2019 Totally Office calendar. So if you want to check those things out, they are on PrestonSteve.com. Of course, you can get the Daily Rush videos and all that other stuff. Real quick, I know I'm going to mention a milestone thing here in just a second, but first, before I forget, because I highlighted this and I had it setting aside, and I'll forget to do it if I don't do this now. But Casey, did you know that the Guinness Book of World Records world's largest bounce house is going to be in Aston this weekend?
What?
Okay. World's largest bounce house.
Yes.
Is it going to be indoor or outdoor?
It's a 10,000 square foot bounce house.
That sounds awesome.
Yeah.
900 foot long inflatable obstacle course and more. It is the Big Bounce America Tour, and it is going to be at the Maple Zone Sports Village in Aston.
Okay, that's like right on 322. Yeah, and they have like a giant complex there, like baseball field and stuff. So, yeah. I mean, they definitely have the
it can't the be inside if it's 10,000 square feet.
Yeah. No,
yeah.
That's, yeah. I'm so
they it's have in a, someone's house, Preston.
Oh, my God. They have an adult-only session.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, that's great.
Man.
Oh, that's phenomenal. So Friday, Saturday, Sunday, and
Tuesday,
then...
Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday.
No, this Friday, Saturday, Sunday, and then the 31st, June 1st, and June 2nd.
Okay.
That's pretty awesome.
Yeah, it is.
I'm going to be away this weekend, so I can't
come back. But it's next weekend, too.
I can come back for that.
So massive inflatable attractions, world's largest bounce house, incredible obstacle course, unique space-themed Wonderland. So I thought you guys would find that interesting. So
that is interesting, and that one's not going to fly away.
Right. No, should not.
Yeah.
Yep.
All right. Well, also, you remember, was it last summer or two summers ago where they were supposed to have that long-ass water slide?
Nothing happened with it. It was going to be, I remember the plans for it looked pretty amazing, and then nothing. Yeah.
And then we laughably wanted to try to pull one off ourselves.
We were actually scouting sites, and then suddenly we snapped out of it.
Yeah. No, that's never going to happen.
Let's snap back into it, guys.
All right. Today, 50 years ago, May 23rd, 1969, The Who's double album rock opera Tommy was released. That was a milestone. Was it in Almost Famous where she leaves him her records and with a note that says, light a candle and put this on and it will change your life?
Yeah, that was the first time I saw the art for that album.
Classic album art.
So it came out 50 years ago today, man. Conceived and primarily written by Pete Townsend, based on a boy, Tommy Walker. This is the information that I'm reading officially about it, who, although born healthy, is traumatized into an autistic type state at the sight of, and it says here, his father murdering his mother's lover. It was the other way around. The mother's lover murdered the father. Because remember, they thought the father had died in the war in a plane crash, had been shot down, and then he shows up years after when mom had already had a relationship with this guy, thinking that the father was dead, and then there's a fight.
You know what? I never caught that part of the story.
Yeah.
I just thought it was the shock of seeing the mother with someone else.
Yeah, in the movie, anyhow, the lover kills the father. And once rendered deaf, dumb, and blind, Tommy is abused by multiple outside forces, eventually becomes treated as a new messiah due to his flawless pinball prowess, which is seen as a sign of his divine spirituality and purity. Oddly enough, it worked at the time.
Now, listen, so I first was introduced to Tommy by the movie, and I heard that soundtrack before I heard the full album,
Me
Tommy.
Too. Me too.
And then my friend said, no, you got to hear the original.
Yeah.
And then I said, oh, my dear God. And I was just blown away by how good it was. And that I'm maybe like a solid year. That's all I listened to. I just loved it.
Yeah, I was brought into it by Elton John's version of Pinball Wizard.
Yeah.
And as a kid, I thought it was, I loved it. And so I went to see the movie. And like you, Steve, it was after that that I realized it was, no, there were these other pieces of music that were the real, where it started.
And the performance of, I think it's Sparks at Woodstock, you know, that whole Townsend going nuts with the guitar and smashing it and his classic stuff. It's the stuff of so many rock legends.
Sparks is a song that he listens to in Almost Famous when he puts the record on and lights the candle. He had Sparks. I didn't like the movie. It really threw me off.
I thought it was weird.
Yeah, and the styling, maybe if it had been redone or done differently, I would have enjoyed it a little bit more. But just that 70s style of cuts really threw me off.
And not only that, you had Anne Margaret, who was singing in a very stage show type of...
Yeah. Tommy!
The really big vibrato.
But and Jack Nicholson.
Yeah.
He was the doctor.
Yeah. I saw the musical at either the Merriam or one of the theaters downtown, and that blew me away because they were really faithful to The Who's music, and I loved that. So seeing the stage production of it was pretty impressive.
Yeah. So back in 2013, Townsend had shed light on the original idea and work process behind the album in 1968 and 1969. And he said originally in the story, pinball was not a part of the exercise. The boy was not deaf, dumb, and blind, except in clinical terms, and he had been traumatized. He said, I spoke to our manager, Kit Lambert, who is the son of Constance Lambert, who knew about opera, who knew about music outside rock and roll, and he was very encouraging to me to do something very audacious and grand that was challenging, and challenging in a way that would challenge our audience. He said, the only thing that's important is the audience. The only thing and the message is from the audience to the stage, not the other way around. It's a strange mechanism, he said, the one that underlies rock and roll. The hero is not on the stage, so the hero is not Tommy. It's everybody in the audience, and I know that sounds like a pat cliche, but it happens to be true, he said.
I'm not quite understanding that. So
I don't either.
Yeah, yeah.
So here's something that's a little more of an insight. So
okay.
He also said that due to the sexual abuse that he personally suffered as a child, He needed to hand some of the more disturbing plot twists in the storyline to bassist John Entwistle to compose because he didn't want to do it.
That's Pete Townsend?
Yeah.
Wow.
He said Uncle Ernie isn't about specific sexual abuse. It's about the threat of it, the inference of it, the fear of it. I actually asked John Entwistle to write that one because I couldn't deal with it. I'd had my own bad time with my grandmother.
Jesus.
I had been eroticized at an early age, and I'd had to learn to deal with it.
Yeah, so, he had a whole bunch of crap going on.
Yeah. So, and Uncle Ernie is a pretty disturbing part of the whole storyline.
Yeah.
There's Uncle Ernie and Cousin Kevin.
Cousin Kevin is a lunatic, a sadistic lunatic. Yeah.
Yeah.
God, there, you know, the whole, also the sound of it, the big orchestral stuff, as well as the acoustic stuff, as well as the, also, you know, Keith Moon, man, that drumming, so sensational, everything about it, but it's in the pantheon of rock albums, it's a double album, it's, top five easily?
Yeah, it's up there. I don't know that I've ever listened to it from front to back without pausing or, you know, just hearing a song here and there. I wonder.
You end up listening to, a side or, one of the albums. And it's wild. So that many years, I wonder how many times they performed it live over the course of those decades.
Yeah. I remember it was a big deal because they had decided to do a live version of it, and this was probably 84, 85, 86, somewhere in that range.
Right, right.
And I remember listening to it on the radio because they were broadcasting it. They were simulcasting it all around the country. It was a big deal that they were going to be doing this. And I'll never forget because before it started, Roger Daltrey comes out and he gets on the mic and he goes, in the words of Keith Moon, "Have some respect. It's an effing opera." And he flat out dropped the F-bomb on the radio. And I was like, "Ooh!" And you had, like, Cousin Kevin was played by Billy Idol.
Yeah.
Uncle Ernie was Phil Collins.
It's cool.
And they had a bunch of guest musicians. I don't know if Tina Turner was the acid queen in that particular one or not, but she was in the movie.
And she's good in the movie as the acid queen.
Yeah.
Well, it is too trippy, the movie. I agree. I'm not a huge fan.
So with the 50th anniversary and they're playing the show this weekend, I got to imagine they're going to not just, you know, play Pinball Wizard and call it a day.
So they're with an orchestra, correct? Yeah, yeah. And there's going to be now Man About Town Bill Weston was saying he has heard that Won't Get Fooled Again is going to be done in an acoustic way.
Right, right.
So they're going to take some cool riffs on some classics.
Yeah. I saw them. I did see them one time. I saw them at Madison Square Garden, and it was fantastic.
Yeah.
And this was in the probably late 90s. But I remember, you know, behind Blue Eyes, I'd gone. I'm like, I got to go to the bathroom because I'd been drinking a couple beers. And as I'm in there peeing, I start to hear the beginning of Behind Blue Eyes. I squeezed and peed as fast as I possibly could because I was not going to miss that.
Yeah.
But what a great band. So hopefully you're headed out this weekend and the weather looks great. Saturday, man, sunshine, 78 degrees ballpark.
And they still got it. Yeah. Well, those who are there still have it.
By the way, speaking of, and Pierre's going to have side four for you today.
Yes.
I believe so.
You should have heard Bill talking. Are we ready to play Scratch?
Are you serious?
Yeah.
Because they scratched up vinyl. And he's playing it on.
I think we have concert coverage this weekend, too. So I'm going. Pierre's going. Brent Porsche is going to go. And I haven't seen them in a long time. The last time I saw them, I think, was across the river in Camden. So and I've never seen them in the ballpark. And I certainly have never seen them with the symphony orchestra. So
do you think they'll recognize you now?
They'll probably recognize me. They know my association with Eddie Vedder.
Right.
Yeah.
You're not wearing your baseball cap.
They definitely are a stadium band. So
yeah. Oh my God!
If there's somebody that can pull it off, it's these guys. Speaking of this weekend, Memorial Day weekend, a holiday weekend, AAA has got its predictions and traffic and what you should do if you're traveling this weekend.
Yeah. Right.
So it says that drivers will hit the most traffic tomorrow in the later afternoon as commuters leave work early and mix in with holiday
travelers.
I know.
It's You're a, saying
yes.
that most people are going to try to get a jump on the Memorial Day weekend yes. and leave work early, and that's when the highest levels of traffic will occur?
Listen, it's...
What?
People need to know.
No. Mm-hmm.
Most major metro areas are predicted to experience traffic that is three times worse than
usual. Whoa. You're saying areas that naturally have higher populations will experience higher levels of traffic?
Yeah.
What the hell?
That's exactly what I'm saying.
What the hell?
The areas with the worst predicted traffic are Boston and Washington, D.C.
Well, they're usually known as pretty easy driving. Right?
Oh, that's right. You know, we've got an event coming up with the National Association of Broadcasters in D.C., and we were kicking around. Steve and I are going for, you know, our company. We're accepting an award, and they were like, you want to take the train or drive? And I was like, no, just drive down there. And then I thought about it. Washington, D.C., driving? No way.
No.
I'm taking the train.
Man About Town, Bill Weston, was wise, and so we're going to do the train. And we're not going to take the actual conventional train. We're going to ride the rails, Preston.
Yep.
And try to jump on a freight car if we can do that.
There's a free box car.
Yeah, because I love that stew.
Yeah. Hobo stew.
Hobo stew, good for you. Oh. Sticks to the ribs.
That's right.
There is actually a documentary about people who do that specifically... They're homeless and they live
ride the rails
life on the rails.
Absolutely,
pretty wild.
If you saw the movie In the Wild, there's a pretty messed up scene where he gets busted and they call him train detectives. Guy comes out and beats the ever loving piss out.
Oh yeah, yeah. The movie Ironweed depicts that with Jack Nicholson and Meryl Streep.
Yeah, we had a family friend when I was growing up as a kid, and he was a locomotive a railroad detective, and he would do that.
Yeah.
Drag vagrants off and beat the crap out of them.
The word was they were told to send a message, mm-hmm. and so they would be especially brutal.
Yep. So,
but you guys aren't doing that.
No.
No?
Well, no. I think if we're pretty fast runners, so I think we can elude them.
Yep. Okay. I think we'll have a good shot at it. So, speaking of being outside in summertime, as I was this particular weekend, I did see this. Now, we heard that, sunscreen is
deadly.
It's absorbed into your skin than I initially thought, and now they are rethinking all this. Which, by the way, I need to find out that information again. Somebody was going to send me like some samples of spray versions of the safer sunscreen.
When you get them, can I see what you got?
Because I never got it.
I use the spray because it's easier to apply.
Yeah.
And now that I know that my entire insides are rotted out from because I use sunblock every day. Now I use the best that's out there supposedly, but I want to make sure it's correct because I. Even in a slightly overcast situation, I always make sure I have sunblock on. So
there was actually something to what my mom was saying.
Yeah, no, honestly, she said it hasn't been tested.
About the anal cancer or this?
No.
No, the sunscreen.
Oh, okay. And there was something that's a particular ingredient that's in it, and then we started getting word on the ones that
Nutella.
Are safer. But I did read this the other day, that if it says, you know, all natural or, you know, organic or home remedy sunscreens, it doesn't work.
Well,
for the most part.
That's not true. So you have to look at the ingredients on the back of it. I have an all-natural sunscreen that you won't get 1 ounce of sun on your body if you use it. I actually don't like it because Steve, you would love it.
Okay, well, I want to see it because right now I'm using Uncle Carcinoma skin tag formula.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Uncle
Carcinoma. Uncle Carcinoma skin tag juice.
Uncle Carcinoma. Skin tag.
That's homemade, huh?
It's homemade.
So, Kathy, does that come in a spray form?
The one that I have does not.
You got to use a roller. See, listen, I agree with this. Even if it's a squirt, like, because that way it's kind of like a porn thing.
Squirt.
No, even if it's just, it's easier to apply that way. Now I have the Helioplex, the Neutrogena, and, I'll put that on. I tell you what, though, and it's better to do that than get skin cancer.
Yeah.
But you put that stuff on and you feel like you're encased.
Yeah. I don't mind the squirting stuff as long as I'm wearing a UV shirt.
I wear the UV shirts. Yeah. Do you wear UV swim shirts, Case?
I do.
You have to.
And because I'm, you know, there's just too much.
You.
Me. There is too much me. So just too much surface area, you know, especially if you're going to be like slathering that stuff on. That's why, you know, if I'm not wearing a shirt, I'll use the The spray.
Well, by the way, the point I was going to make, and I know we got to wrap up here, Case, but this study, University of Kansas City researchers have found if you grow a mustache, it's safer for you out in the sun. So, Kathy, you're good to go.
I'm good to go. Oh, won't get paint on my face. Uh-huh.
So then why not a beard? So are the safest people out in the sun Hasidic rabbis?
Mm-hmm. Maybe, probably. They found that men, they looked at a bunch of men who were men who were diagnosed with actinic keratosis on the head of the face. It's a scaly spot on the skin that can develop into squamous cell carcinoma, a type of skin cancer. They found that men who had a long history of sprouting substantial sheltering mustaches, which is one that's at least a third of an inch thick, had a 16 times lower risk of developing that particular kind of cancer on their lip.
If your mustache sticks out about a foot and a half, 2 feet,
yeah, you're
and
good.
You can shield your torso, you're in good shape.
Probably sheltering mustache. That's a good name for a band, the Sheltering Mustaches. A third of an inch. That's a thick stash. I couldn't grow a mustache that thick.
No.
There's no way.
I would have to use it. What about wearing a fake mustache? Would that work just as well?
That's the Steve Harvey mustache. Third of
an inch. Ridiculous. That thing's not even real.
Yeah. All right. Anyhow.
Harvey's mustache.
Just thought I would pass those little tidbits of information along to you. We do have to take a break because we have a guest who's going to be joining us in a minute. Casey, give me those passes to give away. Thank you. Is this the last of it?
That's it.
Let's give away the last of these. 10 of them, in fact. Godzilla King of the Monsters, next Tuesday. We got a screening of this.
I'll be there.
5 p.m. at the UA Riverview in IMAX. A little bit on the early side, so keep that in mind before you call. You need to be there by 4:30. 215-263-WMMR. 10 callers are going to get those tickets. We're going to come back in a second. Turei's going to be in our studio. We're also going to talk to Lance Reddick of John Wick Chapter 3 Parabellum. So stay there.
What's new?
Glad you asked.
Thrice. Hold up a line. Shine now. Papa Roach.
New music, more of everything that rocks.
On 93.3 WMMR.
Our next guest has got shows at Punchline tonight, tomorrow, and Saturday, and we welcome him back to our studios. Turei!
Hey!
How you doing?
Steve, Kathy, and Nick, how are you guys?
And Casey.
What about Casey? And Casey. Casey brought me in, so I guess I should have spoken to him first. I was thrown off by the blue man pedicure. That not the fact that they were blue, but I actually took a look at his toes, and I was like, your toes look good, man. Like they look like you have a nice pedicure going on.
I got to take
Casey.
Care of my feet.
Yeah, man, I see.
Right?
Like that John Kruk thing is just for the salad up top.
Yeah.
But the feet, you got the nice Kardashian toes there, man.
Do you groom up a bit, or you're well put together.
Casey put me on the spot. He wanted to see my manicure, which I don't have right
okay,
now.
Okay,
so,
all right.
But yeah, I do a little manscaping and grooming and all of that. So,
all right.
When you get a chance, you go. And I got to agree, it's a great thing to have the legs massaged and the feet massaged.
He raves about that.
How about your eyebrows? You take care of those? Ladies are big into eyebrows.
It was funny. I have great eyebrows.
Yeah, you do.
So I have, I do go through the ladies' problems every now and then. Like my eyebrows get long and attached to my eyelashes. So yeah. I call them female problems, but no, I normally go ahead and take care of that myself simply because I don't have any other hair, so I'm not going to just let anybody
right.
just cut my eyebrows. I need to hold on to these. So
yeah.
I try to keep my eyebrows nice.
Well, he raves about the pedicure.
Here's the deal.
They do the foot massage thing. And
they do every, and you don't know that your feet and legs need a massage until it happens.
Oh,
yeah. Until she starts banging. On your calf, you're like, wow, I didn't know I was so stressed.
That is the truth. I will go in for a massage, and I'll just go like, just upper body, whatever. Yeah. And then they'll say, well, I'm going to work on your legs a little bit. And they get down there, and you're like, oh.
Yeah.
I did and not know.
Do you guys get massages?
Yes.
My wife years ago convinced me to go for it. Well, and I
you do.
I,
you though, have to take care of your body.
Yeah.
Here's
you know
the thing.
What? It's awesome.
When you're now you're veterans of massage, so you're good.
Yeah.
Like, you know, that first two.
Yeah.
I was in there hollering like, oh.
Yeah.
Oh, God. She was like, sir, if you could, I was like, I'm sorry, I never felt that before. I didn't know I needed that.
Yeah.
You know? So, I'm good with my sounds now. Now I'm a little muffled now.
You know, but, well, they are, and I said it, and I freely admit that it's dumb, but I I can't. I have to talk to the person doing it because I feel like I know I wouldn't want to touch me. So I'm like always apologize. So I talk at my
male or female. You need a male or female?
A female.
Yeah, got to be a female.
I know.
Has anyone done the couples massage?
Yeah, I have.
Yeah. So I go and you know it's a guy for my lady. So
okay.
I was like, can we switch? Yeah. I don't know how much I want you rubbing my lady down.
You ever have anybody walk on you massage?
No. I'm 6'6". So
you're lying down.
I get that. I'm just saying, I'm not laying down for somebody to walk on me.
It's actually cool because they have the bars. They sort of hold themselves
the
up.
I mean, it's y'all taking it to another level, man.
Yeah.
I know, and I'm going to keep it real. You know, when I go for massage, I didn't really just go for the shoulder rub. At the end, that's what I came for. So, now massages are more, videotaped and under surveillance. So you can't do those things.
You're talking about a Robert Kraft.
Yeah, just a Robert Kraft. Who's trying to have it suppressed, but they're going to drop that video, man.
It'll get out. It'll get out eventually.
Somebody's got enough money to get it out.
Absolutely. I will watch it.
Yo, you know what I was thinking about the other day? Somewhere, Marv Albert is going. See? Like somewhere Marv Albert's like, y'all thought I was bad.
But you know what? He was one of the first dudes I can remember who went through all that but kept his career.
But he got in front of it, dude.
Got in front of it.
You gotta slide in front of that podium. You gotta have an apology.
You remember the weird thing though, too, Ray, with that is that he was a dude who wanted to bring another dude into his threesome.
Right.
So which was like weird. And then he was also into the biting.
Yeah.
He was also into wearing the women's underwear. All that stuff separately works out, but bringing another guy into
the combo of the whole
it was just weird. But then
that's tame, but now you got cuckolding these days.
It's passé.
Marv Albert.
So Preston, regular cuckold or humiliation cuckold?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, you got it. If you're going to go all the way.
And you know what's funny about the cuckolding? I never look for that on X videos, but it just comes up.
It just show up, doesn't it?
Like, you might want to see this too.
Right. Is it? Now listen. Okay, so occasionally if you visit, what is the most popular site in the Pornhub?
Well, I go XNXX.
Okay.
Because I guess it's a little grimier. Like Pornhub is like,
pedestrian.
XNXX, it's just pictures.
Go big or go home.
Yeah.
Right.
What's scary?
There's not
about
even real words under there. It just says A or B. Yeah. You pick one.
What's scary about those suggestions, though, too, right, is that there's some sort of algorithm, right? So, like on Facebook or Instagram or Twitter,
You might like this.
Somebody caught me. Somebody commented on the one of the pictures I liked on Instagram, like, oh, Turay has a type. I was like, yeah, I do, because it's BBWs. And they got an analogy. I mean, it's an acronym for all of your likes. So
let me ask you, have you heard of, we have to remain, radio safe, but Preston introduced, we had not heard, figging. Are you familiar with figging?
I am not, but put me down.
Okay.
Let me know. I mean, don't put me down. Let me know what we're talking about.
It's where they take...
Pause.
It's where they take ginger root and put it in the rear end. And it's supposed to give you some kind of burning sensation.
I noticed Cassie's silent on this whole... I was wondering why ginger root, but obviously...
It burns a little bit.
Anybody remember Jerry Pinacoli?
Yes!
So we moved on from live... animals to herbs.
Some of those acronyms, though, like I never even bothered to figure out what the hell they meant. And I eventually found out, POG, P-A-W-G. You know what that stands for?
Yeah. I've seen it. I don't know. What is it?
Ray, do you know?
Fat-ass white girl.
Fat-ass white girl.
I'm on BBW, POGs. I got them. I'm on fat-ass white girl. All day.
No, I read it as, and maybe I'm wrong, but pretty average white girl.
Nope.
Nah.
Oh.
Nah.
Fat with a P.
P-A-P-K.
I like that.
Yep.
So now, you guys know what a Dirty Sanchez is.
That's Pat.
Kathy's way into those.
Well, she was Puerto Rican for a while. So
Weren't we all?
Yeah.
Weren't we all?
Wow.
But yeah, man, it's funny because you got to go online and you got to cut off, you got to close out and then clear your windows. Clear your cookies.
Amazing how the hubris of people, and Preston will have stories all the time of like a guy going to give a lecture at work or whatever, and he hasn't closed tabs on his browser.
Yep.
And it's like, listen.
Yeah. and here's, it'll pop up.
Here's the deal.
And start playing.
And you put it under a folder that says hard disk erase or something, so that no one would go near it because it's like, well, I don't want to screw up the computer.
Right.
Take an extra step. You got to do precautions. Even still, though,
well, what it is,
someone somewhere knows all your kinks.
Right. When you're doing shiesty stuff, you kind of try to just get out of it as quickly. So normally when you're watching porn and you stop watching porn, you just close the laptop or put the tablet down. And,
boom.
Right. Yeah. You forget.
Uh-huh. There's an app they used to have, and it was for, you know, and it was pretty quick. You would you just tap a key combination and like a spreadsheet comes up.
Yeah.
Immediately. So that if you're at work,
I got one of those on my phone. Yeah. Oh, I got one of those.
Nice.
Yeah. What were you looking at? Oh, this calculator. Figure out this calculator.
The Q1 is looking very promising.
Yes.
I'm going to switch this out of porn.
Sure.
Yeah. Thank you. So, Two Ray's going to be at Punchline tonight, tomorrow, Saturday.
Doing porn.
Memorial Day weekend. Yes. So it's a holiday weekend. Yes. Is that a tough weekend to work?
It is, but there are people who didn't get a chance to get out. So that's who that's for. And just the people that are, you know, Memorial Day is not the toughest.
Yeah.
Because it's kind of early, so you're really not out of the work ethic yet. Labor Day and those later holidays, 4th of July, like nobody's coming to you.
Because they're traveling. They're out. But here they're just enjoying the world. Right, I think you're going to be fine.
I think so, man. I hope so. You guys got a big listenership, so hopefully some of the people will come out.
We'll send them out.
I wanted to ask you, I was looking on your Instagram site. Yes. You have lovely daughters.
Thank you, man.
And the daughters all appear to have had proms.
Yeah, different proms.
Different proms. Yeah. For a dad, and Preston has a daughter that'll, you know, and Casey has as well, is that pride and terror mixed together?
That's a great description.
Yeah.
Well, I'd look at it like that is my daughter, Courtney, who was the senior at Bishop McDevitt, and I threatened her date. I patted him down.
I would imagine you would. How could you not?
I took a picture of his ID.
Yeah.
And I took him for a walk, and I showed him where I would put his body. It's a little grassy area right behind my house, and, you know, nobody would notice, so.
Now, Toure, I'm looking at your daughter here.
Yes, sir.
Okay, and respectfully, did you talk to her about the dress? Because that comes down pretty low in the front.
Yeah, it does, but she has the little, lace cover across. In front of it. Okay.
And
honestly,
what the girls are wearing to prom
very
now,
classy.
That is nothing.
Yeah, okay. And it's funny, until she put it on, I didn't realize how elegant and classy she looked. Because it was very, very nice. But yeah, P, I you know, you don't see your children like that.
No.
So it's an unveil.
Yeah.
Until prom.
She came down the steps, I'm like, okay.
I wanted to ask you something, but I'm afraid to, because she's gorgeous.
Yeah, thank you.
Would you rather have an ugly daughter than somebody else?
Nah, because then you got to deal with them problems.
Okay.
You got to deal with the ugly girl problems, like, you know, wanting acceptance. Like, my daughters get to date who they want.
Yeah.
Ugly girls got to date who they get. And you don't want to be the dad with the cat just showing up. Like, yeah, man, send your daughter outside.
I mean, listen, they're classy, elegant women, and you're proud, but I don't know how you would want to go. Dear God.
Yeah, I got 5 girls, so I'll always be broke.
Because you know how you were.
Yes.
You know how you were.
That's why I got 5 girls. This is what God says. Man plans, God laughs. Like, you thought you was like, so.
Yeah.
It makes me very aware of women. It makes me very aware of how we should treat women.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying I'm better than any. I'm just aware of it.
You're like part woman now at this point.
Pretty much. My cycle's regular. My cycle's synced to theirs.
It's made you more respectful of the porn site you visit.
Yeah. I don't go to the... Yeah, I stay in my lane. I don't go on no porn site that got nothing that looked like was in my house. It's all over there. But no, man, I think the most beautiful thing about it is that they still give me the respect of being dad and all of that. They still listen to me.
That's wonderful.
So, yeah, that's
probably the hardest thing in the world is to keep that. That's why my wife and I just have cats and a dog.
Yeah, I mean, you really can't. It's something, but...
Any of them graduating this year?
Yeah, Courtney's graduating from McDevitt, so that'll
she be, got college plans?
ESU.
Okay.
In Stroudsburg, so she's already full ride.
Ready to go. Good for her. Good for you.
Full ride.
You ever get your kid's report card and realize this wasn't you?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
My daughter, my baby had a 95 in pre-calc. I was like, yeah, is she just walking around with that? Because I slapped my algebra teacher. I swear to God. Me and my algebra teacher came to blows. I was like, if you think I'm going to learn this, you got another thing coming. So for her to have the grade she has, she's just a magnificent creature, and I'm proud that she's my daughter.
Anybody showing interest in entertainment?
No, I don't see it yet. My daughter, Toure, I have one of the twins is named after me. I have twin daughters that are 16. One is Toure, one is Sunaya. Toure is named after me. She has the timing. She has comic timing.
Okay.
Like, Toure doesn't, when she says something, it's deadpan and it's dead on. Like, when I remember, and I use it as a joke now, they were like six, and I told them what I did for a living. And they were like, I said, I'm a comedian. And they were like, well, you know, they didn't know what comedian was at six. I said, well, I stand on stage, I tell jokes, people laugh, they give me money. Yeah. Come home, feed you, pay the bills. And my daughter, Sunaya, was like, okay, Dad, I saw you on TV before. I was like, cool, I'm all proud. Mm-hmm. Toure looked me dead in my face. She's like, so you like a clown. And to a six-year-old, you're like, what? You're like, that's a clown. Like, I hear you, Daddy. You try to make it seem like it's a lot, but sound like a clown to me. So, but that's exactly what she said. I mean, they have that. So, you know, I don't push any of my children to do anything. You know, if whatever they want to do, I just try to support them. So if they want to start doing comedy, I'll definitely be there for them.
Toure, I wanted to ask about, because I read this, you went on the Soul Train cruise.
Yeah, man. That's something.
Bahamas. Was it fun?
Was it cool?
Oh, my God. It's so
fun. I love
fun.
Soul Train growing
because
up.
It's the era of music that mattered. Not to say this doesn't matter, but every one of those artists comes to perform. And, yeah, they're a little bit older than me, and they're a little bit older now, but they're magnificent performances, man. I enjoy myself.
Who'd you fanboy out on the most?
Ohio Players.
Ohio
Players are sitting
right next to those. Yeah.
And, you know, you don't know who they are.
Yeah.
And literally on the bus right next to me, and I was like, oh, my God, that's the guy from the Ohio Players. And then I tried not to, but I started humming. I was like, heaven must be lied. And so it's always good to see him now. The Soul Train cruise was a great cruise.
Were you working it, or did you just go as a fan?
Casey, I don't go nowhere for free. If I don't get paid, I'm in the house. It was all those nice things I said, but it was a check. No. I was working, so
that's
I was
awesome.
Blessed to be. Yeah, it was blessed to be there and to meet those guys and be working with them. But I did another cruise, the Tom Joyner cruise, which is a little
Tom Joyner's a legendary broadcaster. Right, he used to do two morning shows a day.
So he has a bigger budget. So first night, this is before the cruise leaves the dock, and that's when I realized I fanned out. It was LL Cool J he went to perform.
Wow.
And I ran. When you push past women to get to the front of the stage to see LL perform, I lost my cool so much I called him by his real name. I was like, James! I don't fan out much, but every now and then you see those artists that are like, wow, I got to say something. And I've been fortunate to work with quite a few of them.
When in those cruises, obviously, you know, so my friend Dwayne does the Kiss cruise. Mm-hmm. He's a massive Kiss fan, and they did the big thing, and they have a blast. He sees the same people. But it's the perception that Gene Simmons is over by the buffet is not, you know, they have their part of the ship and they perform, right? I mean, they're not always mingling around, are they?
They can stay in their cabin, but if they're coming to eat, you're going to see them.
Oh, all right.
There's no, like, secluded areas of a cruise. Like, normally, they may go at a different time.
But you're
right there.
Well, that's pretty cool.
Yeah, on the Tom Joyner cruise, Tom Joyner tells people, have your camera ready and give them 60 seconds. They're not going to stand there all day. Don't be rude about it. Like, take your picture and keep it moving. But
right,
you know. But yeah, they're there, and it'll have you double take and look like, oh wow, like that guy's standing right there.
So, the audience is good and receptive?
They're great.
Yeah,
they're great. They're great on themed cruise. I think they're better because, like, if you just go on a Carnival cruise, they're just going to put like hospital food, vanilla entertainment, you
know, right? Yeah,
because they don't know who's on it. But when they're themed, they know who it is. They know what type of audience it is.
So it's focused.
The entertainment is a little better, and so are the audiences.
Got any plans this summer?
Yeah, man. I'm going down to Georgia to see my mom and then going to take my lady to New Orleans. We vacation in New Orleans. When we get a chance to go somewhere without getting paid, we vacation in New Orleans. Good food. It's just a real cool soul in New Orleans, man. Like, you go to New Orleans and you just relax. I do.
I was surprised to see
that. Just relax.
You know, you're a big foodie.
Yeah.
And you, New Orleans, you say, is your favorite city for food, but Philly, you know.
Oh, no, no, don't get me wrong. I eat my fill here, but I cook a lot, too.
Oh, do you?
Okay. So in Philly, I'm, you know, I cook. New York, I love New York. On the road, I'm a road comic, so I can never stick to my diet on the road. Like, as soon as I get out of my hotel, I'm like, oh, there's a California Pizza Kitchen right there. And it just starts. It's like, I'm going to eat this and I'm going to eat that. So
yeah.
I'm a big foodie. I love traveling and grabbing food, but I cook a lot. So home.
No, I didn't know that.
I do say go to the Renton Terminal to shop for my, you know, for my groceries because of the fact that Philly has that. I can get any type of groceries here. I want any nationality, any food. So right. I love Philly for that.
When you go to New Orleans, I mean, mainly we know, you know, Bourbon Street, the height of all that party. Do you spend much time there? Or is it elsewhere that you're
hanging
out? I
do spend time on Bourbon Street during the day. I have relatives down there, so I move around. I would tell anybody to go to New Orleans if you get a chance to go to Willie Mae's. It's a small.
I've been there.
Chicken.
It's like a house.
Right. And you, when you seen it, it was like the best chicken in the world. You was like, yeah, get the. Is that chicken not?
Yeah.
I was surprised. I was like, wow, this is.
This is mostly fried or what is
it's
it?
It's fried chicken. But it was like, you know, which is like, you know, black people walked in there like, yeah, all right. I'll show you.
I want to make sure this. Yeah, this is it. He pulled up a picture.
Right,
I was there for a convention, and these radio guys were like, we got to go to this Willie Mae's place. And Willie was there. She was an older woman. I don't know if she's still alive.
Not the ball player, Willie Mae's.
Willie Mae's, Nola. But
it's like, I'm like, we're in a neighborhood.
Yeah.
I mean, like, we're not, you know, and we walk into her. Yes. And she served us food.
Dude.
And I wonder if she's still alive.
No, she's not.
Okay, all right.
She has that property's moved to another area. But
okay,
the recipe's still good. But yeah,
did it blow you away, Preston?
Well, it was great. It was just Southern food. Yeah. It was really, really good. It was like you were in someone's home having a meal.
There's
really cool.
Right, but it's not on Bourbon Street,
so that's why I wanted to mention it because it's something you just have to go get.
Okay. I was in Atlanta, and same sort of thing. We went out to a place called, I think it was Aunt Pitty's porch or something like that, and it was like a house in a neighborhood, but the food was sensational.
Well, you know, it's funny, and in Philly, when I bring comedians and comedians come here, they always remark about Sid Booker's at Broad and Hunting Park,
right?
Which is it's an all night shrimp spot.
Mm-hmm.
But as comedians see it, they see, yo, you know how they be selling shrimp out the side of a house because it's only window service.
Okay.
And
I've never been there.
Right. So, yeah, you got to get three, you know, you stay until 4 a.m. But the only thing, they only serve fried shrimp in baskets.
There
so that's it. That's all they say.
Okay. And it's an all-night shrimp place.
Until about 4 a.m. So
right?
It's like, it's nothing but fried shrimp. So,
wow.
And they're delicious. But people be like, yo, they be serving shrimp out the side of the house. Like, it's not a house.
I do. There's something to be said about places that do one thing.
Yes.
Yeah.
And,
that's,
and there's no bartering. Yep. Mm-hmm. You got to pay extra for cocktail sauce.
Yeah.
Ain't no fries. It's like, look.
Where is it?
It's at the corner of Broad, and I think that's Windrum.
And they're open till 4, huh?
Till 4.
All right.
Night.
Wow.
Go check them out, man. Sid Booker. Right. So that's one of the foodie spots in Philly that you might not know about. Little, as we call them, hood spots.
Would you open a restaurant? Have you ever had any designs on doing something like that?
Funny. I was just talking to Becky, who's from Live Nation and brought me out today, and we were talking with the business.
Yeah.
I'm in that part of my game now. So I'm not only a comedian performer, but the business. Restaurants don't make a lot of money, and it's hard to maintain.
It is hard.
Like,
yeah.
I don't know if I would want to go through that. As a comedian, I'm already sensitive about my art.
Yeah, yeah.
So, I had my favorite hot dog joint growing up. It was there forever and ever, and it went out of business. And I was talking to – didn't go out of business. But anyway, it ended up shutting down. Mm. And I was talking to the owners last year about when are you guys going to open it up again. And the lady said, do you know how many hot dogs you got to sell, you know, to make a profit?
Right.
And I never thought of it like that.
No, I think restaurants are places that people that individually own restaurants are labors of love. Like, they do it because they want to. They enjoy feeding people. They enjoy, but
it's... Well, like 90% of them close shut. The odds are stacked against you.
I mean, I'm a struggling comic. I got to, you know, I'm not trying to add another struggle to the odds. And I don't mean struggling in the aspect of not being funny. I'm hilarious. It's trying to get through these bills and these kids, man.
You know what you ought to do for a stunt one night is after one of your shows, you know, like Andy Kaufman did back in the day. He took everybody out for milk and cookies.
Yes.
Yeah. Take everybody out for some fried shrimp after one of your shows.
You know what? I will.
You should.
I will.
Turay is going to be playing Punchline tonight, tomorrow, and Saturday. So one show tonight at 8, two shows on Friday and Saturday, 7 p.m. and 9:45 p.m.
Yeah.
You want to get your tickets at punchline.com and don't miss it, man. But it's great to see you. Thanks for stopping
always in. Always thanks for having me, man. Once again, punchlinephilly.com is where you get your tickets from. But always great to be here. I thank you guys so much for always inviting me and having me up here.
Anytime, man.
Thank
have a good weekend. Two Ray, guys.
Yay!
Take a break and we'll be right back. Stay with us.
Like the Preston and Steve Show podcast? Check out MMR's other audio on demand at WMMR.com or on the MMR mobile app.
Say goodbye to juggling paper coupons and missing out on the best deals. Download the Acme mobile app today to have your own personal grocery guru right in your pocket. Use it to plan your shopping list like a pro. Get personalized deals on the products you buy most and choose your shopping style. Whether it's in-store, delivery, or drive-up, where an experienced Acme associate will carefully select, bag your order, even pick up your prescriptions from the pharmacy and bring it all right to your car. Acme. Fresh foods, local flavors.
Back with more of the Preston and Steve Show podcast.
Yeah, we're getting back into things. About 10 minutes after 10 o'clock. Today being a Thursday morning. We get another letter for the Word of the Week prize coming up in a little while. And yes, we skipped the bizarre file, which I'm glad we did because it was great hanging out with Toure again.
He's great.
Absolutely hilarious and a super nice guy. So he'll be at Punchline coming up through the course of the week. And what else do I need to mention here? Archbishop Ryan High School, Northeast Philly. That's the coolest teacher. You are up for that. So text word teacher followed by the teacher's name, 39333. Whoever you want to submit for that, we'll find out who the winner is tomorrow. One vote per phone number, mind you. And we're all set for our next guest. So I want to move right along and segue into him.
Big fan.
John Wick 3, Chapter 3, I should say, Parabellum, is in theaters now. And Steve, you were raving about it.
Both Casey and I saw it, and it's sensational. I love it. I love the whole series. I love where it's going. I love how it started, and I love this guy in all three.
Yeah, so he is it Sharon or Charon?
You know what? I don't know the exact pronunciation.
You just know the dude. But let's get him on. This, ladies and gentlemen, it is Lance Reddick. Hey, Lance, how you doing?
I'm good. It is Charon.
Charon.
Thank you very much. That's cool.
Yes.
you have had a lot of fun playing this character in all three of these movies.
Oh, it's been a great ride. I never expected it to turn into this.
Yeah.
You know, I thought the first movie was great and, you know, move on. I didn't think it would turn into this a franchise juggernaut. So,
you know what I love about
surreal.
Yeah, about Lance, and it progresses in the proper way because you have, I understand the director was formerly Keanu Reeves' stunt double, correct?
Yeah, on The Matrix. That's how he and David both... David, who actually co-directed with Chad on the first film, they were both not just stunt directors, but they were the stunt. Well, Chad was actually Keanu's stunt double on The Matrix,
okay.
The first film, but they were also the stunt coordinators in films. So that's how they have their relationship with Chad. Excuse me, with Keanu.
Well, listen, I don't want to give away anything. We live in a time of spoil alerts and so on and so forth. But in Parabellum. You come out from behind the counter of the Continental in a great way, and so I want to ask you, so did you go through a lot of the similar tactical training that I know Halle Berry did and Keanu Reeves did for this third episode of the John Wick trilogy?
I went through when you say tactical, I went through a fair amount of the tactical gun training.
Right.
I don't know that I had as much extensive training as they did, but for me, it was a lot. I had a lot of stunt work in terms of choreographing my action scenes, but I didn't have all the grappling and judo and jiu-jitsu training as those two did.
Well, I wanted to ask you, too, because you have an accent that you affect in the movie. Were you allowed to sort of develop the affectations that your character has, or was that in the script?
It just said African.
Okay.
In the script. And so it wasn't specific. And, you know, when I the funny thing about it is when I first read it, I didn't notice that. And then when I went back to look at the role to start working on it, I realized, oh, gosh, I'm supposed to have an African accent. And so I called to ask, and they said, well, it's not necessary. And then I thought, but you know what? That would be really cool. Let me try that. So, you know, I have a tape of a Kenyan accent it's a guy that I taped 20 years ago for another film that I did that was actually set in Kenya called I Dreamed of Africa. So I pulled that, you know, out of mothballs and I started working on it.
Well, it works perfectly. And I love because, as you know, the whole fact that this series was set in motion by the killing of a puppy And you know, John Wick gets his dog. And I always know that when you are there looking after the dog, it will be fine. And, you know, that whole relationship and the whole thing that they...
I'd like to think so.
Yes, yeah. Yes, absolutely. So with this, now I was familiar with you. I was a big fan of a number of the shows that you've done. You were on Lost, The Wire, Oz. You were also on a show that I loved called Fringe. So you've had a good track record of getting involved with what is considered for many people a lot of appointment television. Are you just a lucky guy?
I want to say no, but yeah.
No, you're excellent.
In terms of, you just never know. You know, my first 7 years out of drama school, I never booked a pilot.
Wow.
I didn't book a single pilot. I didn't even test for a single pilot. The first pilot I booked was The Wire, and I've been on 3 hit shows in a row.
It's just astonishing. Now, you had tried out for Lost, you had tried out for the role of Echo, right, Mr. Echo, but that didn't come through.
No, I didn't. Actually, I found out that they were considering me for that when I read it in Entertainment Weekly after I was already cast.
Okay.
Yeah.
So you're also a musician. So which do you consider yourself, a musician actor or an actor musician?
At this point, an actor musician.
Okay.
I mean, music was my first love, and music's what I trained in all growing up. And where I went to, you know, I went to conservatory for college.
Okay.
So I actually thought I was going to be the classical composer, and then I left music school because I realized I really wanted to be a rock star. I didn't start acting until I was 27. I mean, I acted in college for fun, but I didn't really start pursuing acting professionally until I was 27 years old.
Wow. Okay.
So, but at this point in my life, it is, I kind of stumbled onto what I now consider to be my real calling. So
okay.
You just never know.
Hey, Lance, now I haven't seen the film yet, but I've saw the first two and am just absolutely caught up in the concept of this place, this hotel, the Continental, and what it's all about. Do we learn a little bit more about that particular establishment in John Wick 3?
Well, you let me put it this way. You learn more about the world mm-hmm. of this International Guild of Assassins and where the Continental fits into the pecking order.
Okay.
And you definitely see more of my character in McShane's character, and you see more of the inside of the Continental in this one.
Okay. Yeah, it's what's done is phenomenal, I'll tell you that, Preston. And how is it working with Ian McShane? That guy, when he just has that on, as do you, but he has that on-screen charisma that just makes you lock on him.
Oh, he's a pain in the ass.
A pain in the ass.
You know, show up at my door and cut me, man. No, because Ian and I didn't have any scenes together the first two films.
Yeah.
All our conversations are over the phone. So it's so funny because when I first met him, it was on my first day of shooting the second film, and it was... the penultimate scene of the film,
right,
where I drop off John to meet Ian. And actually, even in that scene, Ian and I don't I say goodbye to John and I get back in the car, and then he has a scene with Ian. And when I met him, I was so starstruck, I just said a bunch of stupid stuff. And he's looking at me like, why are you being so weird? So I went back to my hotel. I said to my wife, oh my God, I just made a fool of myself in front of Ian McShane. I'm mortified. Mm-hmm. So it was great to, you know, have, you know, 2.5 months to make up for that.
Well, you know, so Parabellum dethroned Endgame at the box office and just killed it. And now I see that you have worked on Godzilla versus King Kong, which is the sequel to Godzilla King of the Monsters. I assume you have a prominent role, yes?
I can't really say anything about the role.
All right. Are you playing Godzilla?
I lied.
I knew it.
That's great.
Well, listen, we want to point people in the direction. They haven't seen it yet. Second week coming out, as Steve said, it toppled Endgame, which is no small feat at all. But
certainly the fan base is there for the John Wick saga has only gotten bigger, and in fact talks of a fourth. I won't ask you if you're going to be in that because I don't want to know, to be honest. We'll find out down the road, but just want to point people in that direction. But Lance, you're doing great, man. So we appreciate the time today. Have a great holiday weekend and continued success to you.
Okay, thank you. Have a great weekend, you guys.
You got it, man. Lance Reddick. Yeah. John Wick Chapter 3, Parabellum in theaters now.
He's one of those guys who becomes a different guy in every, like in Fringe, he's different than he is in The Wire and in, but you expect him to be talking with that accent that he displays in John Wick. He's just so, and there's, I will not give away anything, but he has a pivotal, what would be a pivotal classic scene, Casey, you know, that and it has to do with the protocol of the Continental.
Okay.
It'll blow you away.
Very cool. All right, we need to do... We didn't do the Bizarre File.
What the hell's going on?
We got to do it now.
Now, Bizarre. WMMR presents Bizarre. Kristen and Steve's Bizarre File.
Yeah! All righty. The Bizarre File is brought to you by Robbins Diamonds in Tax-Free Delaware. Thousands of rings in self-serve cases and absolutely no sales tax versus the 8% tax in Philly. Robbins Delaware Diamonds. By the way, we're going to do the B-File and... we'll do trash music news and all that stuff coming up in just a moment. A full 130 soft-boiled eggs for some reason. The ramen shop owner was perplexed when he discovered the break-in while preparing ingredients for the day's business. What's more unusual is he found the cash in the register untouched. They just wanted soft-boiled eggs.
Put the eggs in the bag.
According to the police, five other restaurants along the same street were also broken into and suffered total loss of around 10,000 yen. Since soft-boiled eggs are one of the main ingredients in ramen, the owner took to social media to announce that his shop would be closed for the day while he replenished his stock.
Well, that sucks.
They're looking for a lot of eggs. Let's see. How about this one? Imagine the luck you would have had to survive being impaled by an item in a car driving on the highway. That's exactly what happened to a guy named Tim Page. He was driving a van on Interstate 5 in California Thursday morning when a tripod smashed through his windshield and punctured his lung.
Oh, yes, I saw the picture of this.
Yeah,
it's amazing he survived.
Say somebody stole the tripod from a California Department of Transportation crew and threw it off an overpass onto the Sacramento freeway. He survived with broken ribs and partially punctured lung. A man suspected of throwing the tripod was arrested on a warrant and might face a charge of attempted murder.
He should.
Yeah, because anybody who throws anything off of a bridge like that is crazy. A man pleaded guilty after admitting that he stole his daughter's Girl Scout cookie proceeds to pay for an erotic massage.
Oh, jeez. Well,
okay, then. I see you.
Brian David Couture was ordered to do 80 hours of community service and pay restitution for filing a false report. He called police saying a stranger had come into his home through the sliding glass door and fought him. The district attorney's office said Couture's laptop was damaged and $700 was missing from a jar of his daughter's Girl Scout cookie sales. He later admitted that he invented that story and staged the house to hide that he had stolen the money for an erotic massage. He will also have to pay a $100 fine and be placed on probation. And I tell you what, we'll just do one more story since we're already running way, way over. Let's see. Federal prosecutors say a man has agreed to plead guilty to stealing a ring-tailed lemur.
Lemur.
Southern California Zoo. The U.S. Attorney's Office says in a news release, a 19-year-old Akinas Kasbar of Newport Beach agreed to plead guilty to one misdemeanor count of unlawfully taking of an endangered species. Prosecutors say Kasbar broke into the Santa Ana Zoo after hours, cut open an enclosure, and took a 32-year-old lemur named Isaac. 32 years old?
Lemurs get that old? Or is that a young lemur? I don't know.
The animal was placed in a container with no ventilation and later abandoned at a Newport Beach hotel.
Oh, that's no way to treat a lemur.
With notes identifying it as having been taken from the zoo. That's no way to treat a lemur. Media reported that Isaac wasn't hurt and was returned to a home. So he's doing okay.
Said he was out of sight.
I get it. Thank you. The love boat. All right, we're going to do a lesson question for today. We are going to give away a pair of tickets to see Marvel Universe Superheroes, which is now open at the Franklin Institute. What does Caitlin's uterus also do? 215-263-WMMR. Other than the standard human function, what does Caitlin's uterus also do, or what is it used as, I could
say?
Yes,
yeah.
215-263-WMMR. If you were listening in and you know the answer, why, you should call us and do it now because you might win. We're going to do the trash while you're calling.
The trash business is a gold mine.
93.3 WMMR with Preston and Steve's Hollywood Trash.
Let's get into it, shall we, Steve? What is up in the trash today?
Well, Aaron Carter is very angry over the reaction to a comment he made about an encounter with Michael Jackson years ago. Overblown, says Carter, noting that he had started to chafe.
Oh, jeez.
I hit the wrong button. Sorry.
Tom Cruise is reportedly trying to recruit his estranged 13-year-old daughter, Suri, for Scientology. Cruise says the trick will be getting that huge seed pod under her bed.
Oh, my God.
And speaking of Caitlyn Jenner, golfing buddies of Caitlyn Jenner reported not liking her recent desire to hit from the ladies' tees. Many of her golfing friends see it as hypocritical, especially since Caitlin once hit a 900-yard drive.
Yeah.
That's your Hollywood trash.
She's a good golfer. I have Craig Shoemaker, who we know is from Philadelphia, has golfed with her on a few occasions, said she can hit the ball.
Is that bogus that she's... for some reason, I can't imagine that Caitlin...
Yeah.
You know, that Bruce... When she was Bruce... You know, she's still a strong person, a large person.
Athlete.
Right.
Yeah. An Olympic athlete.
I can't imagine her saying, now I want to hit from the ladies' team.
I think that's a bit of a cop-out.
Yeah.
You should play to your ability and
right.
not necessarily, you know, play a certain tease because you can.
I mean, you know what this stuff, it may be totally erroneous to begin with.
All right, we're going to go to the phone and see if we can get an answer to this question. What does Caitlin's uterus also do, since we're talking about Caitlin?
Caitlin.
I'm going to go to, let's go to Ed. Hey, Ed?
Yes.
All right, what is Caitlin's uterus also used as?
I believe it would be a paper shredder.
Yeah.
Yeah!
Paper shredder. Hang on, Ed. We got a pair of tickets to see Marvel Universe of Superheroes now open at the Franklin Institute. Explore Marvel's legacy through immersive set pieces, original artwork, movie props, costumes, more. An exhibit for the hero in all of us. You can get tickets today at fi.edu. Music news. Wait, there was something I want to mention. Oh, yeah, Nick's tracking one of those nasty isolated storm fronts its way.
I just got a text from my girlfriend, and I don't live that far away, and apparently it was a serious downpour with a lot of lightning and thunder, and we are expecting it here in Bala shortly.
Yeah, it's looking like it went over King of Prussia and kind of that area. And
tornado!
Well, like, listen, they're saying we could get tornadic activity this evening for sure. Or not for sure,
oh
but
my God!
Quite possibly, because these are small isolated cells, but they're very, very powerful. And so I'm looking at the radar right now. We're seeing a lot of red, which is intense.
Moving through quick, too, though. So
yeah,
probably get a downpour, and then it'll be out.
Like, there, it's in Conchie now, headed towards Gladwin, Narberth, kind of our area. So
what?
If you get, but it looks like these are going to be quickly moving through. So if it's it may be one of those where you got to kind of pull over and wait it out for a minute or two. So just a heads up on that.
Yes, that's always, by the way, that's a wise idea. If you start to get that sort of driving rain where you just pull over.
Yeah, if you can't see.
Don't, you don't have to continue driving.
Nope. All right, let's do music news.
Now, Preston and Steve's Music News on 93.3 WMMR.
Yeah!
All right, it's brought to you by Coors Light. Join the President of the Steve Show live from Keenan's tomorrow. Presented by Coors Light, the Jersey Shore's most refreshing beer. Slipknot percussionist and co-founder M. Sean Clown Crahan has thanked fans for their support after the passing of his 22-year-old daughter. He wrote on their social media account, "Firstly, Chantel, Alexandria, Gage, Simon, and I would like to thank everyone for the endless amount of love, prayers, thoughts, and kindness we've been receiving." He said, "While it's not possible for me to read and respond to each individual message and comment right now, I want you to know that we can feel the energy shared, and we are so grateful. You've all proven that there is empathy, positivity, and strength in this community that we call humanity here on Earth." Now, TMZ reported yesterday that Gabrielle Crahan died from what appeared to be a drug overdose, which is what we were assuming because she was so young. And police and the fire department responded to a call for a possible OD at a Hollywood home Saturday night, where they found Gabrielle's body. Although CPR was administered, she was pronounced dead on the scene by paramedics. Law enforcement sources said that there was drug paraphernalia and evidence of narcotic use at the scene, and Gabrielle apparently had a history of drug use, too. So sad, sad news. Our buddy, Fozzy frontman Chris Jericho, has said that the band will enter the studio later this year to begin recording its new album, but that the follow-up to 2017's Judas won't arrive until 2020. He said, the stuff that we have is amazing. I think that the idea is to have at least a single ready by September to coincide with the Iron Maiden show in California, and that Unleashed in the West tour that we're doing to kind of put around the Maiden gig, and I think a new record will be out early next year. Fozzy just signed a major deal with Sony Music, and Jericho said that he is open to releasing music in any way that the label suggests. So good on him. Ozzy Osbourne guitarist Zakk Wylde and his Black Sabbath tribute band called Zakk Sabbath, which has performed at the MMR Beginning,
yes,
have announced that they are going to record a faithful version of Sabbath's 1970 self-titled debut album for a limited release on its exact 50th anniversary. The album will be titled Vertigo in honor of the British record label that released the original LP. Wilde and Zakk Sabbath said in a statement, Vertigo Records issued the debut album by Black Sabbath Friday, February 13, 1970, and the world was never the same. Exactly 50 years to that date, Zakk Sabbath will celebrate the first chapter of the Sabbath catalog with a reverently rendered tribute simply titled Vertigo. And he said, our aim is to faithfully record the album in the spirit of the original recording. So here's what they're going to do. Live in a fully analog studio, direct to 2-inch tape in a single 24-hour period.
Wow.
Which I guess is how those guys originally did it.
It's amazing.
A film crew will document the process, culminating in a single album and DVD release limited to just 500 copies and delivered to purchasers on February 13th, 2020. So that's kind of neat. Although John Bonham's 71st birthday isn't until May 31st, Robert Plant took time out on social media to salute his best friend, the late Zeppelin drummer John Bonham. Plant posted a photo of him facing the massive sculpture of Bonham erected last year in his hometown of Redditch, England. Alongside the photo, Plant posted another birthday around the corner, huge loss. The Bonham tribute, by the way, weighs over 5,000 pounds, features one side showing Bonham pounding on his drum kit, with the other listing his full name, birth date, and the day he died, and the inscription, the most outstanding and original drummer of his time. John Bonham's popularity and influence continue to resonate within the world of music and beyond. So
it's a really good statue. I like the way it came out. We're looking at the side where he's pounding away on the drums, and it's really well done.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. And then one last thing, my buddy Geddy Lee isn't ruling out creating new music with Alex Lifeson. I think this is eventually going to happen, personally. When pressed as to whether the pair would be teaming up with each other now that Neil Peart has officially retired from music, Geddy, who's been swamped promoting his critically acclaimed tome, Geddy Lee's Big Beautiful Book of Bass, told the Toronto Sun, I don't really know. Alex is turning into this super session guy. He loves playing on other people's records without the responsibilities of having to write anything other than his solo. And I know he's really digging that. I've been doing this project, but we talk quite a lot. He said we see each other quite a lot, and we visit with Neil quite often. So we're all close, but I don't think we would ever do a project, the three of us. It's certainly possible that Alex and I would do something down the road. I can't see the three of us ever really doing anything. So
you know what? Honestly?
Yeah.
They should audition the drummer for Saint.
Stop it.
Yeah. Because he's available. Do you think they would ever go back and just bring another, like, super kinetic, talented drummer in and go out as a troika again, a threesome?
No, I don't think so. And they definitely wouldn't play any Rush music. That was very personal to the three of them. So, no, that's done. It's finished. They hung it up, and Neil's definitely hung it up. But I think these two will get together and write music and then bring other musicians in to play on that music that they've written. And
I'd be curious to see
what that
ends up sounding like. When you seem to think that they're absolutely going to do it. I'd be curious to see what it sounds like.
Any word on whether or not the book tour is going to come to the States? Because right now it's just Canada.
No, it already had.
It did? Okay.
Yeah, he went through New York and he hit a few cities. I'm not sure exactly where. But that was right when it came out. So he may, I don't know if he was in this area or not. But he did do some things in New Jersey, so not 100% sure. It would be great to get him on, but he's been very, very busy. And that is it. So I got music news for you. We're going to take a quick break, but not before we give away a case of beer. I have Philly Pale Ale, and it's from our friends at Yards. Yards Philly Pale Ale this summer. Reach for the classic. We'll take caller number 15. Philly Pale Ale is the seasonable brew that's perfect for good weather and great times. You can bring Philly, bring Yards. Available at Wycombe Public House in Upper Makefield Township. So we'll set you up. Call it 15-215-263-WMMR. Be back in a moment.
Philly's a city of neighborhoods, and all over town, neighborhoods celebrate summer with block parties. That's why this Memorial Day weekend, WMMR will jump right into summer with a big old block party weekend. And get this, we're going to do it every weekend, all summer long. So bring ours to yours. It's Memorial Day weekend in Philly.
Spend it on the station that'll rock blocks on weekends all summer long.
93.3 WMMR, everything that rocks the block.
The Struts! 93.3 WMMR. Do you know what I was channeling there? You kind of laughed. Nah, it's too obscure.
What?
Lisa Left Eye Lopez used to host a show on MTV called The Cut!
Nope.
And that's how she would say it.
I do remember that. Yeah.
The Cut! Well, I said The Struts that way.
Nah. Nah. Who replaced her on that show? It was Right Eye Ramirez.
No. No.
No. I don't think anybody. Did I just make that up? Look at what's coming in here, Preston.
Yeah, we got weather in right here in Bala Cynwyd. Rain is starting up. It's probably going to get really, really heavy because there are some pretty severe cells that are popping up. And that's supposed to happen later on this afternoon as well. Looking like the biggest chance, kind of more the western, northwestern Lehigh Valley area, but goes all the way to the shore. As it's going to be moving, but I don't know what time those are going to happen. But it's not going to be like an all-out gigantic downpour sticking around forever. It's just these intense cells. And a lot of time, these isolated cells are the ones that create those really gnarly storms.
Just rip on through.
Yeah.
So we'll see. Freaking gnarly cells.
I know. We'll see how that affects us. But we are we're headed down today or tonight in preparation for tomorrow. So all set for it. I want to thank our guests. We had on the program today the coach of the St. Louis Blues, former coach of the Philadelphia Flyers, headed to the Stanley Cup, Mr. Craig Berube.
Yeah!
Starts final start Monday night at 8 p.m. in Boston, so beat Boston. Janny Scott of the famous Montgomery's and Scott's here in Philadelphia, and she's got a book called The Beneficiary, Fortune, Misfortune, and the Story of My Father, which is available now everywhere. It's a fascinating tale.
See, we're smart.
Yeah. See? Me and a view, huh?
We're smart.
Touray!
Yay!
He's a great guy.
He is.
He's a naturally nice and funny guy. And he will be at Punchline tonight, Friday, and Saturday. Go to punchlinephilly.com to get tickets. And from John Wick Chapter 3 Parabellum, Lance Reddick was on the program too. So we had a completely full program today. It's been nice. Pierre Robert is now entered into the studio. How you doing, man?
Now you got me.
Now we got you.
The Touré, is he? He lives here, doesn't
yes,
he?
Yes, he does. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. Great guy.
Yeah, he seems really cool.
Mm-hmm.
Excellent T-shirt, by the way, Steve.
Oh, thank you.
I didn't even notice. What are you wearing?
From Russia with Love, the poster from Russia with Love with Sean Connery and the whole deal.
Sean Connery as Ian Fleming's James Bond.
Mm.
Love that.
How about my shirt?
And yours says Stockholm.
Yeah.
Syndrome.
I went there 2 years ago.
Okay, good.
That's why I'm wearing it.
And, oh, I like Casey's. It says further, but it's in the writing of the sporting team.
Yes.
Yeah. Thank you. That's good.
They're called the Phillies.
Yes, them too.
Yeah. Yeah. What about mine? I got a shirt on.
And you, yeah.
What does yours say?
11 North.
Yeah, it's a local company, and they make clothing, so I'm supporting a local business by wearing this shirt.
I like that. And Kathy says laters.
What does it say?
Ladles.
Later's peace.
Oh, I can't see. And from where I sit, I can't see anybody's shirts except for Casey's.
What is it about?
Bye. Peace. See ya.
Later's
peace.
Later. Okay.
Yeah. Peace out.
Peace out.
People don't say later. They say later's now, right?
Do they?
I guess. I don't know.
Well, why does yours say later's?
I don't know. I bought it at Nordstrom because I like it.
But I'll tell you this. She really wants to talk about it.
I get that.
She really wants to talk about it.
I got a last second text. I want to say hi to the person who's listening live from a pool bar in Jamaica right now. You, sir or ma'am, are living the life. Enjoy. We'll get a taste of that. I mean, it is a holiday weekend this weekend, so if you want to channel your inner Jamaica, you can certainly do that.
And this you've already told us from the Weather Bureau of WMMR, you have this weather will blow out, and we have a great Memorial Day weekend on time. Mm-hmm.
Yes, we do. So put on some Bob,
yeah.
And you'll be right there.
There you go.
With that person in Jamaica at the pool bar. We should probably do the letter of the day. Ready?
I am.
All right, let's do this.
Preston and Steve on 93.3 WMMR.
Now, the Daily Letter.
All right, the Preston and Steve Show is brought to you today by the letter...
M as in Maniunk.
All right, and we are going to give away a $500 Mealy's Furniture gift card, and the savings are hot during the Mealy's Furniture Memorial Savings Event. You can save 50% or more on everything in the showroom with free delivery and 0% financing. Plus, Mealy's will pay your sales tax. Mealy's Furniture, all the styles you love for less. So we'll give that away tomorrow, but we kind of do it in a different fashion because we're in front of this huge crowd on stage, and we'll have whoever is running the board for us tomorrow take the winner off air. Which, by the way, is that Jason that's going to be doing that tomorrow? Do we know?
Is he?
Often is.
Usually,
he's very good at it.
Yeah, all right, cool. So thank you, Jason, now because I'll forget to thank you tomorrow. I always do. For helping out. What's up on the program today?
I don't even know if we'll be able to chat because it gets so boisterous down there. I'll be in my location in Atlantic City at Resorts. You'll be at Keenan's. I think we've tried sometimes to do the letter back and forth, but sometimes it's so loud and crazy where you are. And about that time, people have just started to drink. By 10 o'clock.
Yeah, it's so loud that even with broadcast quality headphones on, locked on your head, it's hard to hear.
Right.
So it'll be fun. I look forward to listening to it on my drive down. On the program today, we'll have, a couple of different things. We'll have tickets for our MM Archive session, which will be a week from today with Duff McKagan and Shooter Jennings here at MMR. They'll play that night at the TLA. I'll have tickets for the Archive session and for the show at the TLA. Also, we've got tickets for Greta Van Fleet's second show, which goes on sale tomorrow at 10 a.m. That's cool. And side four of Tommy on vinyl at 2 p.m. And a pair of tickets for The Who on Saturday in honor of the 50th anniversary of Tommy and that The Who is in our area. Wait, there's more. We'll have a workforce block of Van Halen because Sammy and the Circle will be at Parks Casino on Saturday. Block of Greta Van Fleet to go along with those tickets and a block of songs from the archives. And maybe a few more flashbacks to the MMRBQ.
Ooh. Nice.
Yeah. All right. Still keeps on giving. I love it.
It does. It does.
All right. Let me thank our sponsors. The Preston and Steve radio program is brought to you today or powered by DHY Motorsports. Go fast. Go now. Go to DHY Motorsports for huge month-end savings. Also, Acme, the official supermarket of the Preston and Steve Show tomorrow. It's all about the Jersey Shore and summer and Keenan's and Coors Light and the party. We'll bring it all to you from us to Pierre to Jackson. We're all over the place.
Love it.
You should come see us if you have a chance. If not, just live it all right here on the radio. It's a bit of a spectacle. So that is it. We are done. Rage on. And have a great day. We'll see you tomorrow, gang. Bye-bye.
Preston and Steve, love you. Hate you.
Some of these douchebags out there that when you put an ad on Craigslist to try to sell something, you type on the bottom in capital letters, no texting, just a call. And everyone's trying to text me. I don't have this service.
Next message.
Dudes, I got my drunk this weekend, and I found a sombrero in the parking lot. I threw that motherfucker on. And I tried to my heart fell out. Weekends are the best.
Next message.
For the little asshole that picks on a 94-year-old woman, if I caught you, you'd be in for a hell of a spigging, buddy.
The Preston and Steve Love You, Hate You line.
Call 484-434-1333.
MMR rocks.
Brought to you by DellToyota.com and DellChevrolet.com.
Jack, sell them for less.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.